Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Bob Kincaid, 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome, welcome, welcome to this Friday evening edition of Head On. A brand new month dawns upon us. It is the first day of August this year, 2008. Every day we get nearer the election means for certain one more thing, that as of January the 20th, 2009, we will be forever rid of this pig-eyed, jug-eared, addle-brained little lout who has screwed this country up for yay, verily, and forsooth. 7.5 long, tortured, miserable, anguished years. So we got that going for us, which is good. What else do we have going for us? All kinds of stuff to get after this evening. Not the least of which, interesting news on the labor front coming out of workers' rights, for lack of a better term, to wit, Wally World. We got that. And I'm going to dig into the mailbag and share a little something that popped into the mailbox, the real honest-to-God snail mail mailbox today. And we'll have that as well. So there's a good bit of possibility for a good deal of fun to go on, and I hope you'll participate as well. I hope you will. Yeah, that is the adjective, Suzanne. Try not to use the fun words on the inner tubes, the series of tubes. It's not a big truck. It's a series of tubes. Thank you, Senator Stevens, now that you are, in fact, under indictment. And let's see. Phone ring. Just one second, please. I need bumper music. Hold on. Be right with you. All right, we're off to a rousing start this evening. I did a little bit of technical, and that reminds me that I need to load some sort of, Jeopardy music or something while we're for just moments just such as that. But let us not stand upon the order of our battling, but let us battle at once. And let's go, let's talk with our buddy Reverbo. Sounds good. Hey, Reverbo, what's going on?
Hey, how you doing, Bob? What's happening?
You know, we made it to the end of another week, all limbs intact, and I count that in the win column.
I agree. So, are you going to send Karl Rove to jail? Are you going to sign your name to the internet petition and go ahead and let's send him to jail? What do you think about that?
I think I've already signed it. I signed so many, but do I hear a hint of sarcasm in your voice? Because if there is, it matches mine.
The thing about all this is, doesn't it sort of grind on you that we have to be in charge of stuff like this? I mean, it's not as if this has kind of slipped their mind or it's kind of hard to ferret out these weasels. I understand, and Jefferson told us all about this. You know, we're supposed to be in a democracy. The electorate is supposed to be well-informed, and we're supposed to keep our eye on what's going on.
That's kind of our job, isn't it?
Yeah, but we do send all these folks to Washington to kind of take care of this for us, and it doesn't really seem like old Nancy Pelosi and Harry Reid. I mean, it sort of seems like you and I have to now leave messages with them to remind them to get to work.
Yeah, precisely. And, you know, the idea, first of all, the only way Karl Rove is going to jail is if it's a jail that's built inside the Capitol and it's via a procedure called inherent contempt.
Yeah.
All right. That's the only way he can't bond out. He can't make bail because it is a contempt. It's an incarceration for contempt. He will be released in contempt citations, Reverbo. And I don't know if you know this or not, but in a contempt citation, the contemnor, the person who has shown the contempt for the body that is charging, the contemnor has what are called the keys to his own cell. In other words, all Rove would have to do, okay, they vote inherent contempt. The sergeant at arms of the house goes and arrests that pasty faced, doughy little homicidal freak.
Yeah, they all kind of tend to look like Rush Limbaugh, those guys, don't they? They're all kind of bald and fat.
Yeah, they do. And that's no reflection on the bald or balding portion of our audience, especially seeing as how I am a member thereof.
Of course not.
But anyway, so you lock him in an office and you say, Carl, you know, Elvis can leave the building as soon as you put your hand in the air and testify, just like you were subpoenaed to do. And so he then holds the keys to his own cell, literally. Same applies to Harriet Myers. Same applies to Josh Bolton. And even a court, I guess, in the last couple of days, a lower federal court has said Congress absolutely has the authority to do this stuff.
Yeah, they just ruled on that. Look, I just want to light a fire. I just want to stick the pot on the stove and crank up the heat. I don't like this. You know, it reminds me of that, I got a little history for you. The name Louis Brandeis, Supreme Court Justice from the 20s.
Yeah, sure.
He had some great quotes. He's the guy that said, he's the one who said, you can have democracy or you can have all the wealth in the hands of a very few. You can't have both. That's that guy. Anyway, here's something he also said. He says, if government becomes a lawbreaker, it breeds contempt for the law. And, you know, I think that is clearly what's going on in America today, too. I mean, look, you look to the top. You look, things are supposed to, the values of the country are supposed to trickle down from the very top. And I don't know about you, but, I mean, we're just getting slimed.
Well, we are, and it feels really dirty, and it's very, very frustrating, among other things. And I keep in the back of my mind your admonition to make it personal. And I am. I'm taking it personal. I'm so disgusted on so many fronts that I can't begin to tell you because it's very interesting. As I picked up your call, I had mentioned that we were going to dip into my mailbag today because I got me a letter from my senator today, Reverbo. I really did.
Right.
Yeah. I got me a letter from my senator, John D. Rockefeller IV, or as we call him, Rocky Failure.
I believe that's a famous name.
Yeah, it is. It's terribly famous. And it came in response to a telephone call that I made telling him what I thought about his vote and even before the vote was taken, about the FISA amendments. Okay? And so I get this, and wow, it's printed on both sides of the page and everything, and it's watermarked with an eagle on the paper. It must be real, right?
Man.
So he's telling me about how the FISA was crafted in 1978 and yada, 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 and I gets me a history lesson, and because, you know, I'm just a voter. I'm too damn stupid to, I have to have a reminder to just breathe in and breathe out, being how I'm just a voter and everything.
Oh, man, you must have been all of Twitter to get this thing.
I was. My hands were shaking. Agnes had to go and get me one of my nerve pills. But anyway, so he gets done explaining the history. And then on the paragraph at the bottom, and I encourage sitting down for this phone call, or for this portion if you're not already, because you're just going to love it. Everybody listening to the program is going to love this. In addition, talking about FISA, the legislation also recognizes that private companies that had complied with requests to help protect the country from terrorist attacks after receiving legal assurances from the highest levels of government should not be dragged through the courts. It was the responsibility of the administration, not the companies, to ensure that the president's warrantless surveillance program was on strong legal footing. And if it was not, it is the administration that should be held accountable. Let's do that again for the folks keeping score at home, Reverbo.
I was sitting down, and I think I need to sit down even lower.
Yeah, or just stand up and throw something. It was the responsibility of the administration, not the companies, to ensure that the president's warrantless surveillance program was on strong legal footing. And if it was not, it is the administration that should be held accountable.
Has anybody tried to hold that administration accountable?
Well, I gotta do a follow up with this letter, Reverbo, because if I don't, my little punkin head's just gonna explode.
Well, now that you've got a new friend there in Washington, you can just be, you know, hooking up with him any old time.
Oh, we're BFFs, Jay and me.
Absolutely.
But, you know, after careful and detailed review of the relevant classified material, the Senate Intelligence Committee concluded that these companies acted in good faith to assist the government in the period following the 9/11 attacks. They did so with the assurance the program was presidentially authorized and had been determined to be lawful by the Attorney General, the nation's highest legal officer.
Really?
Yes.
Here's what they should do. It's sort of like here. Feed me this belt of 45s while I mow everybody down, but I'm going to say it's okay.
Yeah. Feed me, Mandrake. Feed me.
There you go.
And you were saying, General Jack, you were saying, feed me, Mandrake, and I was feeding you, and you were shooting your gun. Oh, God.
That people think that movie is fiction. It really is a documentary.
It is, and as I've noted before, these sad sickos in the Bush administration actually think it's a how-to guide.
No. And the old war horse McCain is waiting in the wings. He was weaned on that stuff, man.
Oh, yeah, he was. That, Catch-22, we've got a whole list. We've been compiling a list of movies and books that have been thoroughly misunderstood by the Bush administration. But Jay finishes up by letting me know. He says, I take my commitment to provide oversight of the intelligence community very seriously. I will continue to investigate legally questionable activities, and I will push for prudent measures to ensure that U.S. actions are in full compliance with the Constitution and all applicable laws. But I will also endeavor to provide our intelligence officers the tools they need to keep us safe.
Wow, way to go there, Johnny boy. You're really showing me something. I'm glad he's your representative and not mine.
I'm up for a trade. I mean, you know, I'll trade for a senator to be named later because Wayne Allard's stepping down out your way, and I mean, we don't know who we're going to get.
Oh, my God. You know, and they actually took the time. I mean, I assume that they didn't just have one of those rubber stamps and just put his name on there for you. Someone took the time to actually write you back, Bob, with that just pile of crap.
Yeah, that's an hour of somebody's life turned into a form letter.
Remember,
but I'm in West Virginia, so I don't know how many of these form letters they had to send out, okay? Because here, among my party, the Democratic Party in West Virginia, this guy's a superstar. He can do no wrong. He's our Senator Jay. Yay.
Yeah. Well, I guess it's okay with him that his party is basically running a criminal enterprise out of the White House. That must be okay with him.
Well, he's a Democrat.
Theoretically.
Okay. Theoretically.
Well, theoretically, yeah. I'm not entirely wrong with that statement.
No, you're not. No, what he's doing is he's enabling it, and that's what drives me crazy in that paragraph, Reverbo, this business about it is the administration that should be held accountable. Well, there's only one way to hold the administration accountable. Having a hearing with the Bush administration doesn't count because the people that you want to testify, and that's why I brought this up, is based on you initially started the conversation with. You can tell them that you want them to come and testify about the illegal spying operation, and they look at your subpoena and go, subpoenas? We don't need no stinking subpoenas.
Well, this is all new to me, and I don't know about you, but I expect a little more from Senator Rockefeller, don't you? I mean, I don't want you to be, you're in a card game here for keeps, Chief. You're not supposed to just get bluffed away from the table like this. You got to stay in the game for us, right?
That's my thinking.
I mean, they used to, didn't they? That's another point.
Well, to be fair, it's always been a battle. You know, had it not always been a battle, Louis Brandeis would not have had to say back when he said what he said.
Yeah.
It has always been a battle. FDR recognized that it was a battle. To a certain extent, even somebody like Theodore Roosevelt recognized that it was a battle. There were those that just openly sold the government to the highest bidder. Ulysses Grant comes to mind. Warren Gamaliel Harding comes to mind. And then there were those who tried to make a few good things happen while they were there. I think of Senator Norris, who was from nowhere near the region, who was the father of the Tennessee Valley Authority that literally brought electricity to an entire region of the United States. I think that guy was from Nebraska. And yet he was the father of bringing cheap electricity to places that would still be mired in backward ignorance and poverty to this day, i.e. the Tennessee River Valley of the American Southeast. You know, there are those who have tried to do something positive. But right now, what we have is nothing that I would call inspiring. You know, because when Senator Rockefeller tells me that the administration should be held accountable, I'm tempted to write back and say, and how many conversations have you had with my Congressman Ray Hall, saying, you know, the administration should be held accountable? And Congressman Ray Hall says, gee, Jay, how do you reckon we can hold the administration accountable? And Jay says, I don't know, Nikki. I'm stumped on this. Maybe we better look at the Constitution.
Yeah, how do you reckon we can all be doing that there? Oh, my God. What are these people not understanding about this? It literally is about crime. You know, and I heard this, and you can just look these things up. If I decide, let's say, to spy on you, and I don't get a warrant, I can be charged. Well, okay, never mind if I gloat about it later. I think that's called aggravated. But if I spy on you without getting a judge to sign a warrant, I'm looking at 5 years and $10,000. You can just look it up.
I don't have to because I actually am familiar with a case here in West Virginia where an investigator did just such a thing in a divorce case. He, at the insistence of his boss, put a wiretap on and did prison time for it.
Yeah, you can serve time for it. It's they just gloat.
And despite the fact that he was literally only following orders.
Well, I like that. That's always been a good defense, hasn't it? From as far back as, say, I don't know, World War II, perhaps?
No,
it wasn't good enough.
But no, you ignore a contempt citation at your peril, literally.
I would think so.
You ignore a subpoena at your peril. And I do, and we do, and that's the message that's been quiet. We've been quietly trying to hammer home lately this idea that, and you know, David K. I never even really talked about what we did last week with David K. Johnston because it was so information dense that commenting it seemed rather like gilding the lily.
He was a great guest, by the way.
Oh, golly Moses! Holy cow! And like I said, just so information rich that it's hard to actually talk about it. But it's all this information about empowering people to stand up and not and understand that they're being screwed. And at the end of the day, his description is so perfect because personal responsibility is for you, Reverbo, and it's for me, Bob, and it's for everybody listening to this show, and it's for everybody who has to balance a checkbook at the end of the month. It's for everybody who has to live on a budget. It's for everybody who has to choose between new tires and fixing the hole in the roof. Okay, both of which are absolutely necessary and absolutely critical to continued survival, but you got to choose what, and we got to do that, and we have to be personally responsible for all of this stuff, but our betters, hell. Let them just make it up as they go along. Give them a break. I mean, for heaven's sakes, hold this administration responsible? I mean, the nerve of somebody putting that in a letter to me. I mean, how stupid do they think we are?
I wonder how this person thought, I mean, you're just another guy who, you know, who pulls the lever in the voting machine. What does he think you're thinking about stuff like this? The problem is, that's why I like Obama so much, or one of the reasons, is the guy at least treats us like we've got some brains. Like, not all of us, while we were, you know, while I was in social studies class, not all of us were skipping that and out in the parking lot smoking cigarettes. It's like he at least treats us with, like, we got some sense, and we want to get engaged, and we want to get this train turned around. And your man Rockefeller does not seem to want to do that.
No. Why should he? I mean, look, I got a thing that I've been had laying around for days that I haven't touched on. The Democratic leadership of this state, including Senator Rockefeller. And see, this is the beauty of doing so-called liberal radio, is that we're honest enough to criticize our own. Maybe it's not a plus. Maybe it's a minus. Maybe I should be a water carrier for people like Jay Rockefeller. But I don't have the stomach for it because I still have to live with myself in the midst of having to be personally responsible and all of the other stuff that goes with just being a schlub in the giant American machine. I have to be able to live with myself. And I can't just go, well, isn't that nice? Oh, they are heroes of the people. No, they've announced that they're going to build up at a place called Benwood, West Virginia, Reverbo, which sits hard by the banks of the Ohio River, the first next-generation coal-to-liquids plant. And they're going to make liquid coal for us to power our automobiles on. Hallelujah. And there was a big splashy press release and all of this. And guess who gets to pay for it, by the way?
I give up.
You do? I do.
Man, that sounds like, that's one of those, like, brainiacs from the future coming back with a crazy idea like this to power our cars on coal. That's just incredible. I can't wait to start paying for it.
Hey, oh, it's going to be a beautiful thing. And it's one of these lovely dodges, too, where It's that stuff David K. Johnston was talking about, Reverbo. It's the upper echelons getting corporate socialism while we get the free market. Okay? Because Senator Rockefeller and Governor Manchin here in this state have said that we taxpayers are going to subsidize this. The sons of bitches building this thing aren't going to pay any taxes on it, just like what David K. Johnston was talking about. And what's more, they will reap, it's SES is one company, and Consol, which is a coal company, is the other one. They're going to build this not even so much with their own money as with tax financing from the state of West Virginia. And this is the first plant of about 7 or 8 or 12 that our governor and Senator Rockefeller want to dot this state.
Yeah, it's just unbelievable.
And we're going to pay for, and if the thing should happen to go belly up, guess what? We pay for that too. Or if there's a horrible spill or a leak, or if an entire neighborhood somewhere between the Moundsville and the Sistersville, West Virginia, is poisoned, we get to pay for that too. They get the socialism, we get the free market. And I'm about sick of it, and I want me some of that socialism.
You know, when you think about it, this is the thing that really burns you up. Wouldn't it be great, and I know this, that just sounds like such a dumb way to start a sentence anymore, but sometimes you're kind of at your wit's end about this. Here are people who call up the politicians and they go, look what I've done for you. You owe me. How about this? How about people that call them up and say, look what I've done for the country. Maybe we can work something out. You pick. Which guy do you want to invite over for dinner?
Yeah.
I mean, it's unbelievable. Yeah, the thing that you used to be able to at least count on, I don't know, and maybe I've been looking at history through rose-colored glasses or something. Maybe I'm just not getting this. Maybe, like you say, it was always this battle, just like that science fiction thing about it's always personal. It'll always be a battle. But I thought that, you know, at least in the United States, in civilized countries, that no matter what else was happening, you knew that the bad guys would be going down. You know, you could just count on it. Sooner or later, we'd get around to it, and we'd take them down. And now, I'm just not so sure anymore.
I'm not sure at all, because among other things, now bear in mind, all right, we started out with my little thing out of the mailbag here where Jay Rockefeller's going to hold the administration accountable instead of the phone companies that did the actual spying. Yeah. Glory to God. Okay. But, you know, and the administration broke the law, blah, blah, blah. And I've just told you the story about how Jay's all over this coal to liquids plant, right?
Yeah.
So yesterday, it's a lovely day here in the hills and hollers of West Virginia, and there's this old stodgy resort down in Greenbrier County called the Greenbrier. And I mean, it had the bunker in it where they were going to go, the Senate and the House and everything were going to go in case of the Reds decide to push the button down and all of that. Oh yeah, no kidding. At one point in time, I wanted to put on a screening of Dr. Strangelove inside that bunker after they announced its existence and allowed people to see it.
Now, you weren't going to get to go down in there, were you?
No. I was going to stay out here and live in the nuclear holocaust, me and mine and everybody else.
I think they were going to send us all a lawn chair and like a can of punch or something to watch the show.
Right. You know, you sit there in your lawn chair. It's just like the 4th of July when the fireworks go off and you go, ooh, ow, yeah. So you got all this accountability talk from Jay Rockefeller, but then before that you had him talking about building highly unaccountable coal-to-liquid power plants, and then on this sunny day in Greenbrier County, West Virginia, who shows up at the annual meeting of the West by God Virginia Coal Association, Reverbo, but George W. Bush.
How do you like that?
Snuck into my state yesterday and snuck right out. Yeah, he spoke to him early in the morning, spent about 30 minutes doing for the Coal Association what Monica did for Bill. And he says that there is no more reliable source of electricity than coal. Coal's affordable. Coal is available right here. And coal provides jobs.
Man, we got to get some bumper stickers made up in a hurry.
Lordy. Wait. No. It gets more fun. Okay, because there's all of that business. Bear in mind the fact that 50% of the coal that's mined in West Virginia goes to China and India. Yeah, really? Metallurgical-grade coal? Yeah, it's not keeping our damn lights on. It's making it harder for little Indian and Chinese children to breathe. So he says all that, and then guess who else was at this meeting? Another one of these folks that I mentioned his name a little bit ago. The guy in the sort of hypothetical conversation with Jay Rockefeller about how they was going to hold George Bush accountable?
Mm.
Yeah, my congressman, Nick Rahal, was there. And he's quoted in the Charleston paper today as saying, the president told me that the cost of fuel is putting a real dent in the White House budget. I told him it was time to start flying Air Force One on coal to liquids.
And these guys are just so funny.
I am that close to the straw in the liquor bottle right now, Reverbo. Honest to Jesus, I am.
Well, you know, here's what we got. We got to end this on a happy note. It's Friday. Here's the way. I live in North Carolina. I know I got to deal with these people too. You talked about them the other night. At what point do you just give up and just leave them behind? Because you just can't talk to them anymore. But here's going to be the way. It's not just going to ruin their day. It's going to ruin their life. And I really do hope they get on board. That let's just hope 2008 is just the beginning of the end for these neocon zombies. Because President Obama is not something they're really looking forward to.
No, it's not. But there's only one little problem here, and I'm sorry to ruin your upsurge of
I was really surging.
Yeah. Nobody can quite seem to get Senator Obama on board with the idea that ruining entire communities with coal and liquid coal and all of that stuff ain't such a good idea.
No, he's not perfect. But
No, he's not perfect. But he is far less of a coal whore than old 894 would be. He is manifestly less of a coal whore than George W. Bush is. But
before he makes the wrong decision, at least he'll pretend to listen to you. Boy, I just really, really, really disrespected him bad right there. But what are you going to do? Look who ends up running for president. We're just lucky this guy's running. That's all I can say.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what are you going to get?
My wife and I were having this conversation earlier because she's as frustrated, perhaps more so than I am. And she said, you know, I'm at a point in time where I'm going to be loyal to me and loyal to my family. And that's about as far as my loyalties are going to run. And I said, listen, you know, we can't just knock off and say to hell with it and not go and vote in November. And no way am I not going to vote for Obama.
They would want. Because, I mean, this is part of their game. You know, after a while, people feel so powerless that they just think they're just throwing the towel. And what that means is they stop voting. And as soon as they stop voting, the status quo just stays in power.
Oh, yeah. Well, the minute they please.
I don't mean to suggest that you or your wife or anybody.
No. But Reverbo, you're right. And that plays into the hands of the corporate elite that we started out talking about. Because the less people vote, the more the money that they've spent buying legislators means, the more value their economic votes have. So it's almost like we've got to get out to the polls in spite of not just them, but in spite of ourselves.
We need to dilute the special interests. I like where you're putting that.
I'm tired of having my vote diluted. Let's dilute theirs for a little bit.
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, real quick. One telecom company that really didn't just say, okay, we'll just go ahead and do whatever you want. George was Quest.
That's true.
And you know what happened to the CEO of Quest, don't you? They brought him up on charges of all sorts of, like, stock, weird stock situations.
Oh, yeah. I mean, don't cross the family. Do not cross. No. I mean,
They did say, no, we don't think we're gonna do that. And they didn't do it. So,
yeah,
I'm a big fan of Quest by any.
Well, it's hard to get all busted up and warm and fuzzy feeling about any of them, because of how they themselves behave. But I did have some respect for that because, you know, this letter tells me if I was any one of these telecoms, I'd fire my entire legal staff. Honest to God, I would. All those lawyers that I'm paying $150,000, $200,000 a year, and fire them. Who needs them? You don't need them because now you can just say we were only following orders and it doesn't matter what the law was.
Yeah, they're useless. So I don't know there's no point even asking them to look into anything.
Yeah.
Right, it's easy. Yeah.
Never another legal memo at AT&T or Verizon or any of these outfits. Screw them. Fire them. We got the Congress on our side, baby. Hey, Reverbo, good to hear from you, brother. You have yourself a wonderful weekend, all right?
Well, I appreciate talking to you, and look for some emails from me from time to time, and I'll check in with you down the road.
Every time I see one come in from you, I open it quick as it gets here.
Okay, Bob, take it easy.
All right, you too. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Oh, what a great way to start the program, our buddy Reverbo. Take it personal. That's what Reverbo says. Take it personal. I'm into that. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, I didn't expect to get on so soon. I didn't mean to muddy up your stream here because I'm not following it. I'm on hold. good evening.
Howdy.
Thanks for taking my call. A long time ago, when I first started listening, did you have some kind of a little contest about if you can figure out what the numbers spell? You know, what the number, the telephone number spells, you get a prize. What was that about? Was that you?
It might have been me. Yeah, trying to figure. That was back when we were just using the regular direct dial number.
Uh-huh.
As opposed to the toll-free 877-4-HEAD-ON.
Yeah.
We were trying to figure out what you would spell with 658-3333 or 658-5453.
Yeah, because I was just sitting here thinking, I used to do that. I used to try to make words, and I couldn't ever come. Did anybody ever come up with anything?
No, because you can't. It's like coming up with the word that rhymes with orange. It don't exist.
John Prine did, didn't he?
Not really.
Anyway, I wanted to, and I know you haven't even gotten to your stacks yet, but I wanted to, something slipped my mind yesterday when I was going off on passing off bad information that I hadn't, God, I'm still embarrassed about that. Something really struck me last week sometime that was so important. My ancestors have a tendency to do things considering seven generations out, you know?
Yeah.
Don't make a move, don't make a plan, don't make a change until you've considered seven generations from now. Well, tying in with how much all this chatter doesn't matter to me personally. I mean, I take it personally, but it doesn't really matter to me much some days. The Navajo over in, I read a notice that in Albuquerque and Santa Fe, the Navajo Nation, a woman has written a textbook in Navajo for school. It's been accepted by the state. And the kids on the res and in public schools will be getting to read about their culture and learn their language from textbooks. And I think that is probably the most important thing that I've heard, in a few months. It just warmed my heart. I thought, now that matters. That matters. They're not going to lose their culture because so many of the, most of the elders or the adults in the Navajo Nation don't read or write the language. It's totally oral. And for this now, the children can pass on the books to their elders and teach their elders how to read and, spark lots of interesting around the fire conversations, you know? I just thought that was precious.
It is. And, you know, those kind of things mean a lot to me, Kate, because when we spend so much time here on language and what language is, and, you know, words mean things and stuff
and
like that.
Parsing every word.
Yes. That's okay. That's okay.
Thank you for that.
You're more than welcome.
I get careless sometimes. I have my own cultural filters based on my experience or my zeal without wisdom, you know. Anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
No, well, yeah. Well, I think you've got another phrase. Your bulldog ass and your chihuahua mouth. I mean,
hummingbird and alligator.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Hummingbird, alligator mouth and hummingbird ass. Yeah.
Right.
But let's don't defame hummingbirds. Okay. They be precious.
Oh, love them. I was talking to somebody on the phone the other day, and he said, "Oh, this is going to be." He's got a hummingbird feeder. He said, "This is going to be fun. Here come. We got a male hummingbird at the feeder, and here comes another one. Trouble." and apparently they're brutal with each other. Yeah, and in a way that you sort of can't see with the naked eye. It's
mm-hmm.
Muhammad Ali shouldn't have said "float like a butterfly, sting like a bee." He should have said "hit like a hummingbird."
Yeah, one attacked me up in the mountains at 9,000 feet a day, and I just thought, ooh, you little sucker, go away. I'm sorry, but I don't even see the flower that you want.
You know. Yeah.
Yeah, it was, but maybe it was just coming to give me a little kiss. I don't know, but it scared me. I don't know, whatever.
You just probably smelled so sweet.
Great. No, I doubt it. I've been camping for about 6 weeks at dry camping at 9,000 feet on Mount Graham, about 3 miles from the Vatican telescope up on Mount Graham.
Oh.
But
that's no Mount Belzoni. Come on.
Hmm?
That's no Mount Belzoni.
Hell no. Not even close. No, but I didn't smell Floyd, I don't think. Anyway, yeah, we spend so much time on conversation on words around here, and I just think some people, words mean more. That's their entire culture, and that now that the children will be able to learn their culture from a textbook and to learn the language, the written language.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, it goes back to the beautiful, amazing work that Sequoia did.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Creating the Cherokee syllabary.
Yeah, that'd be my piece.
And that single-handedly opened up that linguistic culture, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Before the Trail of Tears and after the Trail of Tears, there were Cherokee language newspapers printed in Cherokee.
Oh yeah.
And that's it's such a powerful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Because when you've got your own written language, then you can look at the white guy stealing your land and say, "Read this," and they go, "Huh?" And you go, "Oh, I'm sorry, you mean you're illiterate?"
Yeah. And you don't know how it warms my heart to be driving around Tahlequah and seeing the nation has their own license plate and and walking through the grocery store and there's the aisles are all written in Cherokee. They do that over here in southeastern Arizona too. There's a down by Mount Grant. They have a in the food liner, the food city, whatever. The independent grocer, the IGA store, has the aisles. There's Apache, Spanish, then English, and it just warms my heart.
It has to.
That's what that means in Apache. That's how you say that in Apache? Oh my God. Anyway, yeah, I just wanted to share that because that was one of the things that I had in my little stack yesterday, and I was and forgot all about it. In the middle of the night, my mind goes around in circles, and I said, "Oh my God, I forgot to talk about the Cherokee, Navajo kids. They got their own textbooks now." The point is that just seems to me, if we're picking out priorities and how important things are on the planet, that was important to me last week.
One of those rare moments that I'm walking through and I see a little something on the demonic electric TV box.
Mm-hmm.
I happened to be walking through one evening when the family was watching a really neat show called 30 Days by a guy named Morgan Spurlock, who is a West Virginia native. He's the guy who did Supersize Me. just about killed himself eating McDonald's food.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he's got this program where he goes and does something for 30 days. He got into the Appalachian coal culture, and he was a coal miner for 30 days, among other things.
Mm-hmm.
But this was the 30 days episode where he went to, and I presume it was somewhere in Arizona, and lived on the Navajo Rez.
Mm-hmm.
And him trying to go get a job, him trying, and you pay how much an hour? Oh, man, we don't pay per hour.
Mm-mm. On Indian time.
We pay per day. And it's about $8.
If you show up. Well, you don't have to show
and then,
up.
But then the grandmother and the grandfather were that you were just talking about were trying to teach him to speak Navajo. And there was this delightful scene of him writing Navajo words in English script and putting post-it notes, you know, for door and bed and wall and window, and trying to make his Western European heritage mouth make those 50,000-year-old Asian/North American noises.
Yeah, right out of the throat.
And he just turned around and looked at the camera and said, "This is just so not happening for me."
That's the way I do Spanish. I have my friends say, "How do you say this?" And I write it down phonetically, and then I practice it, and then she laughs at me and says, "Oh, Sara is so funny." You'll get it.
because they made a really kitschy, stupid movie out of it. But those Navajos who kept the Japanese in the Second World War from knowing what we were up to, it wasn't some highfalutin, newfangled encoding machine or anything like the Nazis had. They had a bunch of boys from the Rez speaking Navajo on the radio, and the Japanese listening all they wanted to.
Mm-hmm.
Going,
mm-hmm.
What in the hell is this?
Yeah, there's a couple of code talkers left, and they're pretty special guys. Yeah,
it's a beautiful thing. I absolutely love it. And Satan, and that's the fun side of being. And I don't even consider it liberal, Kate. That's the fun side of just being plugged into the planet. The idea that somebody actually has a right to have their language. Have it suppressed.
The Christians took that away from them. That's one of the reasons that the kids are all pretty much illiterate in their own language now, because they couldn't speak it in the mission school.
Right, and there was a little bit of weirdness a couple of months back where Flush Flembaugh got all bent out of shape about savages in the Western Amazon Basin. You know, people who had They were known to have existed, but they had not been contacted. And there was some dust up about, you know, language preservation. Well, why can't they speak English? It's the only way they'll get ahead in the world.
Uh huh. They'll get your head.
And that was the exact precisely. Yeah. I'll tell you what, you trundle your ass in there and you explain that to them, Rush.
We'll get ahead.
They got a word for you.
Bring Snurdly or Medley or whatever with you.
They got a word for you guys. It's called, Rush. Lunch. It's what's for dinner.
Orders.
Long pig.
Dead pig. With grains. On bread.
And it's like fattening up the pig on the acorn nuts and so forth. It sweetens the meat. You know, you gotta figure. Old Rush, he's probably pretty sweetened up, what with eating all them hummingbird tongues and lark's vomit canapes and his caviar and so forth. Yeah, oh.
You don't even know that hummingbirds have tongues. Will you quit it?
They do. How do you think they get the nectar out of the little hummingbird feeders?
With their beaks?
That have inside them...
I don't know.
Tongues?
I've never been inside of a hummingbird.
No, that's no. Royalty taught us that. You know, they're delicious, and they're so rare because they're so hard to get at. That's the phrase. Speaking of language, the phrase ought not be rare as hen's teeth. That's what we say around here. It ought to be rare as hummingbirds' tongues.
Okay. Well, Well, listen, I'm going to let you get back to the stacks now that you've been totally interrupted for like an hour. Not interrupted, but anyway,
Kate, stop it. You know this by now. There's there is no such thing as an interruption on this program.
Oh, well, okay.
This program's one great big interruption, and it's an interruption in the cosmic ickiness, and it's an interruption in the steady flow of sleaze and filth and nastiness that just, you know, rolls out of the for-profit media and rolls out of Washington like a sludgy river. And we're interrupting that by reminding each other that we can sit around on a Friday evening and pass the jug and somebody can pick a little bit on the banjo or whatever. And we can go back to just being neighborly like we have been known to do in times past.
Well, I just thought I'd like to drop the little precious jewel in the middle of the slime and the sludge and the muddied up stream.
That is a beautiful thing.
Yes, all wrapped up.
In fact, I'm geeky enough to kind of wish I had one of those so that I could try to wrap my tongue around the Navajo language.
Oh, yeah. There is not even any verb for go. She said, we don't talk about go. We talk about how many of us came here, how many of us are going away, how many, it's just no verb, there's no English translation for the verb go. That's like an English teacher taught me, one time challenged me to write everything right, do right for one whole day without adjectives.
Tough, yes indeed. Yeah, wasn't there a conception, I read it somewhere, it may not have been true, but in Native cultures that, you know, where European thought has four cardinal points on the compass, north, south, east, and west,
mm-hmm.
that there were five cardinal points to the native compass, and it was, you know, basically toward the sunrise, toward the sunset, toward the north mm-hmm. star, away from the north star,
yeah.
and in the center, mm-hmm. there was a cardinal compass point called here.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yes. Yes.
And that concept of here is
sacred circle.
Yeah, but to be here and to conceptualize here as a place to be.
Yeah, it's not an adjective or an adverb. It's here. This is now. I mean, it's not. You don't even go from here.
Right. But, well, and that's the whole idea, that no matter where you are,
mm-hmm.
you are here.
Yeah, right here. Yeah, it's a sacred circle. Yeah. And there's also the concept of third and fourth dimension and fifth dimension, too, is really interesting to me because we're really sliding into the fourth dimension faster than the Hopi grandmas told us that, you know, we're here and we're here. The fifth circle's coming. So
precisely.
It's the 3D meat world that gets me crazy, so I just hang out in 4D a lot of times. No words there. No words here. You find that hard to believe that I live in a place where there's no words? Yeah, it's here.
Yeah, the 3D meat world. I always remember the words of Kurt Vonnegut. Happy, happy, happy meat. He was describing, you know, humankind.
Yeah. We are happy only if we are ignoring here. Well, it's 114 here, and we're having transmitter problems with the NPR station, and it's eating up the transmission, and any moment I'm liable to lose my Quest line because it gets eaten up in the heat, so I'm going to hang up and let other people more profound than I take over because I'm here.
Be here. I'll be here.
Be here now.
We'll be here.
Take care.
See you,
Kate. Hug the redhead. Bye.
Oh, I'm so going to do that. Any excuse I get.
What, you can use me as an excuse this time. Oh, that Kate. Yes. Okay.
Hey, you, come here. Yeah, I got to do this.
This is for Kate. Stand here, right here.
We'll talk.
Be here now.
No, I cannot tell her be here now because then she'll tell me where I should go next.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well,
right.
She spends a lot of time in the fourth dimension anyway, so, you know, be here now is, bringing her back. She's not out chasing horses and calling in lion.
Right.
Did the lion ever come in?
You know, the lion story just died. I don't know that the lion did, but the lion story did.
Mm-hmm.
I fully expect. But that's just the universe, not working according to my timing. It's, you know, it's not that point in time where Agnes is supposed to walk out in the backyard and say, "Honey, we've got a new kitty."
Yeah, right.
Especially after seeing that delightful video from many years back that was reposted over at Crooks and Liars, I guess late last week. It was just wonderful. Of the people who were recognized by the lion that they released into the wild in Africa. Did you see that?
No.
Oh, it was a beautiful thing. And it wasn't anything new. They just sort of, it was new. It was one of those, well, it's new to me kind of moments.
Mm-hmm.
But it was a couple of guys who had bought a lion cub at Harrods in London in the late 60s. And he was their pal, and, you know, he was like Lassie to them. And he lived in a furniture store and rode around in Bentleys, and he was all part of the, you know, the hip happening mod scene of the late 60s in London. And then he turned into a full-grown lion, and they realized that it was not going to work out so well.
Mm-hmm.
So they took him back to Africa, and he didn't like Africa.
Oh, that's terrible.
They took him to Africa because he had been born in captivity to parents who'd been born in captivity. He had no idea of Africa-ness.
No.
But they took him there, and with the help of the guy who did, George Adamson, who did the Born Free thing with Ilsa the Lion and all of that,
they
reintroduced him to the wild. A couple of years later, they got back in touch and said, you know, we want to see you, come and see if we can find him. They said, not a good idea. He's got his own pride now.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his, you know, he's raising a family. He's completely wild. He won't recognize you.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this beautiful video. They went and they spent days trying to find this pride. And there's this beautiful video that shows the male lion walking down a rock slope, and he's kind of doing that lion walk, you know, kind of being
swagger.
He's sort of walking slow and
that's called swagger.
Paying attention and not real sure, and then all of a sudden he recognizes them, and he just bolts at them, going as hard and fast as he can get there,
right,
and jumps up on them and hugs them.
Uh-huh.
And a little bit later, the born in Africa, completely wild lioness that he's running with, they show her walking up and sort of rubbing her face on the legs of the guys. And and it was a heartwarming thing, and I showed it to Agnes. And, you know, she got all teary and sniffly. And then I realized I had probably just done the wrong thing and put in a requisition to the universe for that damn lion to show up in the backyard.
Mm-hmm. It's probably over in the fourth dimension, just waiting on somebody to call it over. You blew it, cowboy.
And I done didn't mean to, but probably done did.
Do I have permission to remind you that, hey, dude, you asked for this. You prayed for this.
Yeah.
Way to go, cowboy.
Didn't mean to.
To the Mother Goddess. I was kidding.
Yeah, great big cosmic. Oopsie, my bad. Do over.
Bad baby. No. Okay, I'm gonna leave you where I found you. We need some other callers calling in. Thank you.
All right. Take care, Kate. Bye now.
Bye.
My buddy Kate out on the desert and coming up with all manner of wonderful thoughts. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Pretty good. Well, my name's Matt. I'm calling from Tennessee.
Oh, Matt. Well, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, sir. Thank you. I wanted to touch on that liquid coal. Is that right?
Yeah, it's coal to liquids technology.
I'm telling you, that's crazy. But I'm telling you another thing that we really need to stop doing is just ethanol.
Oh, well, see, that's a brilliant point because, the coal to liquids dodge is actually the same dodge as the ethanol dodge was. Ethanol was sold to corn growing states the way coal to liquids is being sold to Appalachia.
Who's doing the selling?
In the case of coal, it's the coal companies and it is our bought and paid for elected representatives.
Which coal company?
In the case of this coal to liquids plant, it's going to be an exclusive property of a partnership between a company called SES and Consol Energy, CONSOL.
Okay.
But most of the mountaintop removal and stuff around here is done by Massey and Arch and Peabody. Okay. And they want them some coal to liquid plants too.
But I heard it's more efficient than the coal-burning plant. Is that right? I mean, I don't know. It could just be a rumor I've heard.
No, it's not. Depending on the technology, it takes anywhere between not less than 3 and as much as 8 gallons of water to produce, and that's fresh water, okay? It's not like you can recycle this stuff. It takes between 3 and 8 gallons of fresh water to produce 1 gallon of liquid coal fuel.
Do you know where they put that used water?
That's one of the problems, is where to put the used water. Because it can't be cleaned up. It can't be recycled. It can't be refurbished. It can't be detoxified. This plant is going to sit hard by the Ohio River, so I'm guessing they're going to come up with a real good reason for dumping it back in there.
Yeah, that's crazy. Well, now I got something I want to talk about. Now, you bat me down if I'm wrong. I'd like to be wrong on this. But there's methane, lots of methane on
yes.
Titan, one of Saturn's moons, right?
Right.
Now, if methane is a fossil fuel, term that we've used since the late 50s, early 60s, then how can that fuel, that methane, come from fossil? I don't see any aliens there, and I don't see anything growing there. Now, if that truly is there, then how can we say that oil is a fossil fuel and it's a finite resource?
You are well beyond my scientific expertise, and I'll be right up front with that. I've wondered about the very same things. I will tell you this right off the bat. We have, and it's one of the things that makes doing my job such a joy. We have real live, honest to God scientists who listen to this program. They listen in delay. They listen as a podcast, not necessarily live. And they can address this and have addressed it for me in the past, but I don't have the language to answer it with. But when you talk about methanes, pentanes, octanes, hectanes, these are essentially just, I mean, they're just combinations of carbon molecules, unless I'm mistaken.
And a combination of acid rain, right?
Well,
acidic atmosphere.
Pardon?
I heard it's also the combination of a very acidic atmosphere on that moon.
It could be. You know, for instance, I think Venus has an ammonia atmosphere, things like that. But they can be, you know, carbons are not limited to Earth. Carbons are naturally occurring in the universe. And so it stands to reason that things like the methanes and so forth could be free-forming by virtue of the same explosive processes that took place here that take place elsewhere in the universe. I don't think that Earth is the only this planet is the only one the only one like it in the universe. That seems rather presumptive to me. On the other hand, if you talk about it being, you know, biological based, now while you can't see it in methane, every coal bed has a methane bed in it because it's hand in glove one with the other. And any time, especially underground miners, my father having done it, told me about it, being down at the face under the earth and looking up with your lamp and seeing the imprint of a multi-million-year-old fern.
Yeah, those anaerobic microbes, right?
Well, I don't know that those can necessarily be seen with the naked eye. But to see the giant imprint of a fern that no longer exists on the planet and the trunk of, you know, huge trunks of, yeah. And they're all just, they're preserved for all time down there. That's one of those inconveniences that the 6,000-year-old earthers have.
What do you think about this guy named Lord Monckton wanting to debate the global warming topic? His basic argument is that it was warmer in the medieval times than it is today. I don't know where he got that, but
well, there's evidence. there is evidence for periodic, there's no getting around it, there is evidence for periodic warming and cooling of the globe. Obviously, we're warmer now than, say, the last ice age. And there was a mini ice age in Europe in the last 500-700 years. So, yes.
Compared to global cooling like 15 years ago?
No. Well, the question, though, is man's impact. And the deniers want to say that that human beings can't have an impact on global climate, and it's clearly false. But you won't hear them the deniers talking about it. But for instance, and I've referenced this on a number of occasions because it spoke so plainly to me, when the Romans, and I'm a big ancient history buff, the Romans' first real colony outside the Italian peninsula was Spain. Okay? And they colonized Spain because Spain had a lot of silver mines, or had a lot of silver deposits, which the Romans then mined. And they had to smelt it. And they, in order to smelt it, they didn't use coal and they didn't use any hydrocarbons, so it was all done via wood. All right? So, here's an interesting fact. At the time that they're deforesting Spain to burn the wood to smelt the silver that they're digging out of the mines there, there are ice cores that were sunk in Greenland. No, I don't mean at the same time, but scientists have sunk ice cores, drilled ice cores in Greenland, and compared the ice levels. Okay, are you with me so far?
Yeah. You were comparing Spain.
What they can find is that at the same time that the Romans were literally burning up everything that would burn in Spain to smelt the silver, there is a concomitant fall of carbon and ash, and it is measurable in Greenland, that came from the burning of those trees in Spain.
Yeah, we've also got a couple of diseases that have came over across the Atlantic. Is that right?
Oh.
The trade winds will blow them over there?
Some of that's happened, but not nearly as much as by human contact. But the important thing out of those ice cores is that it is very clear that human beings, who were considerably fewer at the time of the late Roman Republic, human beings can have a very profound impact on the climate of the planet because of the very measurable, quantifiable changes in the ice core. In those drilled ice cores in Greenland.
So they found a flux of temperature change due to the burning.
Yes. Yes.
That I haven't heard. That's a new one on me.
I was just blown away when I read it. And oddly enough, I didn't read it in any discussion of climatology. I read it in a history of the Roman Republic called Rubicon.
Okay.
It's early in those pages. The name of the book again is Rubicon, and I highlighted it and went, wow, somebody needs to be talking about this.
Yeah, that's definitely noteworthy to check out.
But there's nothing necessarily novel in it. There's evidence of other of those sorts of things. I mean, for heaven's sakes, look at the explosion of the volcano Krakatoa.
Yeah,
now, that's not man-made climate change, but that's very obvious climate change just from a big-ass volcano. Now, that big old volcano did not pump as much junk into the air as what we do on a consistent basis. And yet the deniers want to say that it's impossible that we could be impacting climate.
So how do you think we would be able to get the world together on that, to sort of follow the same rules? Because as a lot of restrictions being made here, but I don't see very many restrictions being made, say, in China. China's the, number one target, I guess, for that. So, an easy argument would be to, look at them and say, well, no matter how much we conserve here, they're going to make up the difference. It's like if I'm a vegetarian, I've got three other meat eaters out there that's going to eat a little bit more meat and make up the difference. So how can we pull together as a world and
well, the world, regulate this. Matt, the world has started pulling together. The Kyoto Climate Protocols are a world document. It's not just a document that's signed on to by the warm and fuzzy countries.
Mm-hmm.
I have done some reading on this. The Kyoto Protocols are a great beginning. They're certainly not an end. I mean, we're getting scientific information now, and I'm a big science kind of guy, that says that it's plain and simple. We get off carbon, or we go to a place where the change becomes irreversible, and this planet changes in ways that we can't begin to comprehend. For instance, you do mention China, and oddly enough, when the right wing starts talking about Kyoto, they said, well, it doesn't put any limits in place on China. Well, dig it. Now, where did you say you're calling from again?
Chattanooga, Tennessee.
Okay, I thought
Chattanooga spelled with T's, but we pronounce it with D's here because.
Yeah, I know. I got that. That's not too awful far from where I grew up, and I know all about Chattanooga. Yeah.
Yeah,
I get it. Well, you're in the foothills of the Appalachians, okay? Mountaintop removal is coming to East Tennessee. In fact, the Tennessee legislature tried to stop it and couldn't in this latest session. But at any rate, bear in mind that Appalachian coal, you know, there's coal and there's coal, okay? There's high sulfur, there's low sulfur, and there's different gradations of the quality of coal. And there's some coal that you just, you grind it up and you throw it into the burner and you use it to power a steam generator that turns a turbine and boom, you got an electricity from a coal-fired power plant. There's that coal.
Yeah.
But coming out of West Virginia and the Appalachians, 50% of the coal that leaves here, Matt, does not go to a power generation plant. It goes to a boat. And the boat goes to China. Now.
And see, that's where our government could step in and say, no, we choose to have it domestically and not put it on the world market like Russia.
We could, but what we need our government to do is to get serious about getting away from it altogether. Bear in mind, there will always be some uses for coal until there's a better technology. And what I'm describing now, metallurgical coal, we haven't found a better means of creating various forms of so-called high-carbon steel, you know, good steel. And again, I'm running a little bit out of my depth, but there's that. But for power generation, it's just dumb. Burning coal is just dumb. For instance, we started out early on with talking about the coal-to-liquid stuff, and you asked, you know, how is it economy-wise compared to the fuels we burn now. Well, coal to liquid, no matter how clean you make the process, coal to liquid has twice as much carbon dioxide released in its ignition as even dirty old gasoline.
Well, it's producing two-thirds of all the electricity that we consume.
In this country?
Yeah.
It's so profound. Nationally, it's closer to 50%. All right.
Okay.
But for instance, check out this for a specification. There is a mountain that is due to be removed. It is slated for execution by Massey Energy. It's called Coal River Mountain, and it is a site that is about 10 square miles. That 10 square miles, if turned into a wind farm, will power 150,000 American homes forever.
Yeah. There's also Big Frog Mountain. Have you heard of that one?
No, I haven't.
Big Frog Mountain is pretty close to Chattanooga. It's an excellent site. And Buffalo Mountain as well. That's another one. That's
really
cool. We've got a lot of great mountains due to the Appalachians and how they direct the wind.
Precisely.
But
see, if they mountaintop remove Coal River Mountain, that'll be enough coal to power some of these power plants so that somebody in Atlanta can keep their, three refrigerators and six computers going 24/7 for, maybe a year, a couple of years. It's a drop in the bucket. On the other hand, wind power produces perpetual energy that also generates really good-paying what are called green-collar jobs. Now, to me, it seems like a no-brainer. You create 200 or 300 jobs on building this wind farm. Then there's another 100 or so jobs maintaining the wind farm. The wind farm produces electricity which we then, you know, generously ship out of state to power you know, other communities.
So with all the respect, sir, that could be the shipment of being out of state or out of country. That could be solved with legislation to keep all the energy that we produce domestic.
Yeah, but that ain't going to happen because we've got a bought and paid for government, and I include some Democrats among the Republicans, and they'll haunt, well, that's a violation of free market principles. We've got to be able to sell America's lifeblood to the Chinese.
Yeah.
But meanwhile, what you were talking about, pathogens blowing on the winds, bear in mind that it can be seen from space. The way the Chinese burn coal, they don't even think about, you know, clean and green. And it blows across the Pacific, and it lands on the American Pacific coast.
So how do you propose we limit these? Do we do it through rewarding those who go with the change, or do we punish those who do not change? What do you suggest? Should we tax them for doing it, or should we provide incentives?
Well, Mama always said you catch more flies with sugar than you do with vinegar.
That's right.
So I believe in a rewards program. You know, I believe that our government exists within the meaning of the preamble to the United States Constitution, Matt, to ensure domestic tranquility and promote the general welfare.
Exactly.
Well, I would say that under the rubric of promoting the general welfare, we do a pretty good job of that when we start getting, for instance, coal out of our energy equation. And that allows our children to breathe easier. I don't know if you do or not. Do you realize that every woman in America, okay, not some, you know, not some in Appalachia or maybe some out in the upper West where they do a lot of coal mining, every woman in America of childbearing age has enough aggregated mercury in her body to account for a 10-point IQ deficit in any child she bears. That didn't come from anything but coal. That's rich women, that's poor women, that's women who are friends of coal, that's women who understand what coal is doing to them. Every woman in America.
Well, one of our local issues right now, I have a friend that's studying at UTC, University of Tennessee, Chattanooga, there's been very low birth weight in this local area of Chattanooga, and one of the things that they might suppose, now I don't know if they've directly correlated it or not, but there used to be a big TNT factory here during the 60s and 70s. And as you know, there's a big write-up in Sports Illustrated. That's the common one that we use, and it's definitely affected the local health in ways that we haven't really seen. So,
yeah.
I wholeheartedly agree with you. But that's one issue that I sort of am weary of the Democrats going to is having a disincentive scale of global taxation for carbon credits. I'm adamantly opposed to that.
Cap and trade, carbon tax, something has to happen. Because I'm leery of cap and trade simply because it reminds me of the same boondoggle that the Bush administration has engaged in, and somebody can call me out on this and tell me that I'm a complete idiot, and that's fine. But the Bush administration, rather than enforce EPA rules and rather than enforce the Clean Water Act, they said, well, you know, we're going to take new plants that don't, and they're going to new plants that don't emit as much CO2, and they're going to trade, and it seems like it's sort of a zero-sum game kind of thing.
Yeah. it's not a win-win situation.
No, so. We've got it, and I think Al Gore would be in agreement that we're not talking about a situation that remedies the problem. We're talking about half measures. I think that's the reason that Al Gore's not in politics anymore, because the American political situation is such that you can't get anything done because of the money that informs the political process, man. You know, my congressman here, he's a great guy. You know, walking down the street, talk to him. Hey, how you doing? Oh, good to see you, Bob. Blah, blah, blah. You know, we're good. You know. But the minute you talk to him about coal's negative impact on America, and, you know, his hackles get up, and all of a sudden it's like you just said something ugly about his wife.
Yeah.
Okay, because the support that he receives from the coal barons is far greater than the support he might receive from me when I vote for him every 2 years. And the old economic boondoggle is, you know, well, you know, coal brings jobs. There's only 15,000 mountaintop removers left in this state and just a handful of underground coal miners. But you would think that everybody here worked in the mines to hear the coal industry tell it. And they're at such a place that they have to advertise their billboards here now, Matt. Sponsored by a local Caterpillar dealer that supplies all the D9 cats and stuff to the mountaintop removal jobs. And the billboard is just black on white, and it says, coal, yes, coal, America's clean, green, carbon-neutral energy source.
I firmly agree with you in the whole theme of you got to follow where the money goes. I think if you follow the money, you'll find a lot of the roots of the problem. But one thing I've been hearing is, you know, this ExxonMobil, you know, record profits and everything. But one thing I didn't hear that much about is how much they paid in taxes. They paid over $1 trillion in taxes. It's something like $1,250,000,000,000 in taxes when they made
whatever number that is, that's the taxes they paid at the effective rate of about 12%. You pay more than 12% in your taxes, and you work as hard as ExxonMobil does, don't you? You work harder, I'll bet.
Well, if you want to argue about the successful efforts, drilling methods as legislated through GAAP, the general accepted accounting principles, I sort of agree with the successful efforts drilling method. I don't think you drill one hole and you don't get oil, then that's just a loss. No, I mean, go ahead and group them together and get an average.
But the bottom line, though, where taxation is concerned, is these corporations, all right, and this is, I understand, this is a philosophical argument. This is not a scientific argument. This is philosophical. Under the Constitution of the United States, thanks to a piece of dictum, in a 19th century Supreme Court case called Santa Clara County versus Union Pacific. Dictum, not law, but this is what gave birth to it. Under that dictum, it was determined, it was taken as read, if you will, that corporations are persons with full civil rights under the Constitution. All right?
And that gave us the whole corporate veil. Is that right?
And that creates the whole corporate personhood legal fiction. Now, because corporations are persons just like you and me, for instance, some attempts at reining in their impact on our electoral system have been struck down as unconstitutional violations of their civil rights. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, if they are going to enjoy the full benefit of corporate of constitutional personhood, including all the civil rights that go with it, then I think they should pay like the rest of us persons pay. And we exist in a system of something called progressive taxation. The more you make, the more you pay. But because of the tax breaks and because of the lobbying and because of the influence that they have, they pay an effective tax rate that is about one-third of what a family busting its ass to stay, keep its head above water pays in this country. And that's wrong. That's just morally wrong.
So they do not get taxed at a 25 to 30% rate for
Oh, that's the rate. But by the time that their accountants get done doing their accounting shenanigans, the actual rate is 12 to 13%.
Well, okay, I hear you on that, but I hear this argument a lot. And one thing is, like, you know, they can just write off, you know, brand new cars and everything like that. Well, if you think about it, if you're at the government and you're looking at, you know, taxes coming in, they say, well, you take your money that you made and you go buy a car, or you pay taxes on your car. And that car does not, the price of the car does not come out of the taxes that you would have to pay it. That car merely reduces your taxable income. Then you're charged at that tax rate on your taxable income. So it's a little bit less. It's like, say, for example, if you go to church and you, at the end of the year, you get your statement from your church that says, you know, you've given, you know, so many tithings and everything. Well, you can't say, well, instead of paying my taxes, I'm going to pay my church. No, that just reduces your taxable income.
I understand that. However, what American mega corporations get to do is to take reductions to taxable income that you and I don't get, because we don't have the income. Maybe the best or a simplification is to note that you have to make as an individual citizen, you have to make a certain amount of money before it makes any sense at all to itemize and count those tithings that you've made to the church.
Oh, exactly. Yeah. Okay. That's what a lot of people know.
And if you expand upon that and extrapolate from it, you would have to make a whole lot more money in order to take advantage of the stuff that corporations get to take advantage of. And please bear in mind, Matt, that I'm not talking about how, you know, the last 30% of America's really taking it on the chin because of the corporations. All right? It is the lowest 90%, from the 90th percentile down, and very nearly from the 99th percentile down in America, we're taking it on the chin. You know, if the corporations are paying their fair way, and if the corporations are being good corporate citizens, then why did they open up post office boxes in a little pink bungalow in the Cayman Islands and establish that as their corporate headquarters so that they don't have to pay American taxes anymore?
Yeah, they don't have to pay any taxes. It was granted tax free by the King George, who shipwrecked on the island and made us the Caribbean, right?
I'm not sure what the historical background of it is, but as long as you're offshore and in one of these Caribbean tax havens, you're not paying anything in America. Now, your employees working in America, what few are left, they're paying taxes, but you, the corporation, you're not. And that's what underwrites the massive stock profit dividends. You know, and then it happens on the front end too, because we subsidize. We give the corporate welfare to the corporations on the front end as well.
Ethanol.
Well, whether ethanol, which you've already acknowledged is a big dumb dodge, or leases themselves. You know, they're having this hissy about the drilling on the outer continental shelf and drilling in Anwar. Even the Bush administration Department of Energy agrees that it would not significantly impact the United States the oil situation. They want to do all of this, but Matt, they already have internal leases inside the 48 states. They've got oil leases that they refuse to drill on, that we gave them for free.
Well, now, I'm going to have to disagree with you on that statement when you said that, you know, if we open up Anwar to drilling, it will decrease the price of gas, because just mentioning drilling in Anwar has already decreased the gas price. And so when they say 5 to 10 years before we see a significant decrease in gas prices, I totally disagree. The speculators will realize in the futures market that the future price of oil today, the future price of oil in the future, not today, excuse me, will be less than the price today. So what they do in the futures market, they try to regulate it. And I think the futures market started with good intentions with farmers and crops, but has been slightly manipulated.
So I don't think slightly manipulated begins to address it personally, but what you're seeing now, I think, has very little to do with talking about drilling. It actually has to do more with the fact that it's looking like the Bush administration's hands are tied in the war that they desperately want to start with Iran. Because if you notice, if you pay attention to that corner of the world, Matt, you'll find out that when you the cycle usually works this way. George Bush says something hateful about Iran, and oil futures go up. Then Mahmoud Ahmadinejad comes out and says something hateful about the United States and or Israel, and the futures go up again. And then Israel comes in and says, well, you know, we may just have to take care of this ourselves, and the futures go through the roof. And everybody gets rich, Matt. Except us.
Most of our imported oil from. Who's our number one importer of oil?
It's either Canada or Mexico.
That's right. You got number one and number two.
Number three is Venezuela.
Yeah.
So, 15% of our oil, only 15% of our oil imports come from the Persian Gulf.
So I think.
But it is a world market, and it is a world market where the bourse is maintained in dollars, not euros. You know, not any, no.
Yeah.
So it is the American saber rattling and the Persian saber rattling and the Israeli saber rattling has a direct impact on the world market. Because if you look geographically at the Straits of Hormuz, that's a very, very narrow little neck of water. And the whole world recognizes that if we break bad and the balloon goes up, that the world's going to get screwed out of its oil supply. And so the speculation market is not an American speculation market. It's a world speculation market, and that's where that nervousness comes from. Of course, we're also moving into the heart of the political season, and if you watch carefully or you go back and track trends, you'll notice that gas prices went down about this time in 2004 in 2004 as well.
Oh yeah, first.
And 2006. You know, we're talking about powers that have manipulative forces far beyond our own comprehension.
Like when Saudi Arabia bought a whole bunch of gold, and then gold sort of lost its value, and they bought it back from them.
Right, because all this is at the end of the day, this is the whole oil market thing is nothing but a cyclical monetary exchange program. Our dollar was in the tank. It is a little bit better than it was. And as a result, when our dollar's worth less, it costs more to buy it from our foreign oil sources. And therefore, you see price increases that way as well.
So do you think today's reaction by Nancy Pelosi was acceptable? Or?
You're going to have a hard time making a Nancy Pelosi fan out of me. There's very little that she can do right in my eyes right now, just because of everything that she's done wrong before. In terms of talking about the oil companies and the massive profits that they have and that they have made, I'm not in disagreement, and I frankly don't have a problem with a windfall profits tax.
But how far do you want to go? I mean, how far do you want to tax them before they say, all right, I'm out of here. I'm going to put my corporate headquarters in the Cayman Islands. How far are we going to push them before they finally say, okay?
Yeah, but see, Matt, I'm sick and tired of victimhood. It equates a little bit with my view of how we treat the coal industry here in West Virginia. Because, every now and then some little legislator who has not learned his lesson yet will stand up on his hind legs like a real live, honest-to-God human being, and he'll say, I want to raise taxes on coal. And the coal company screams, oh, Jesus, we'll go out of business. And never, we have never, not once called their bluff. Not once have we said to him, okay, fine. You know what? If you go out of business, you go out of business, but you can't take the coal with you. It stays in the ground.
Well, we came really close when with the successful efforts, accounting practices changed. Really close. And that's why GAAP changed.
See, I believe, you know, Exxon, you want to move your corporate headquarters from Dallas to the Cayman Islands? You know, you can do that. You can do that. But you know what? You want to do business in the United States of America? I mean, can you really do, I mean, how much of your business is in the United States, Exxon? Because I believe in pushing back. I believe in pushing back hard when one of these, you know, if they want to engage in thug tactics, you know, they want to bring a knife to a fight, I'm bringing a gun. I mean, and that's figurative. I'm not a violent person.
Oh, no. But when peace ends, you got to do something about it, right? You can't just sit there and get knocked around.
And so if they say, well, you know, you want to windfall profits taxes, you know, we'll just have to quit, you know, doing, you know, okay, quit. We'll open up the United States of America Oil Company and we'll do it in the name of the people. How's that? And then watch them just turn purple with apoplectic rage as they begin to scream, socialism, communism, oh my God, workers of the world, unite, you have nothing to lose but your chains. Oh, there's going to be atonal music, you know. And there won't be. There never is. There never is. This is, no. But we refuse to call their bluff. We refuse to talk tough with them. We refuse to, you know, the Congress always blinks. You know, for God's sakes, we can't even get Nancy Pelosi to enforce one of her own Congress's contempt citations. Holy smoke. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And we've got a phrase on this program, that comes up from time to time when we talk about things like this, and it's this. It's all wrestling. It's Saturday night down to the armory, and the guy in the blue trunks is gonna win this time. Next week, in the next armory, the guy in the red trunks is gonna win. And 3 weeks from now, we're gonna have a steel cage death match. It's all wrestling, some of it. I mean, and because at the end of the day, I'm not going to say that Democrats are as bad as Republicans about it, but I will say that they, you know, I know from my own observations that they have a hand in it. There's too much corporate money in many ways. You know, you've said, well, you know, how do we do, you know, do we do cap and trade? Do we do tax? Do we do rewards and incentives? I'm a carrot guy and not a stick guy. But at the end of the day, there is a simple starting place solution for all of this. And that is the public financing of political campaigns. And then you get people who are not corporate financed, who don't take corporate money, into the Congress, and you start making some progress. I mean, you saw, I'm sure, the indictment of Ted Stevens the other day, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, bear in mind, this guy was funneling contracts to a political donor in exchange for the donor basically rebuilding his house.
Yeah, holding the first floor off the ground to make it a second floor. I mean, you can do it a lot easier than that.
But as Mark Levine pointed out, our bribery statutes are so antiquated and Byzantine that you can't charge the sucker with bribery. If you saw the guy handing Ted Stevens the bag of gold coins, you could not charge him with bribery because there's that proof of the quid pro quo.
Oh, I found these gold coins.
But on the other hand, there's at least a statute out there that says that a political corruption statute. We need to fix that. I mean, how about a very, very simple statute, and I realize that's tough for Congress, but a very simple statute that says no member of Congress shall receive any form of remuneration or monies or gifts in kind or properties or any sort of tangible realty or personalty whatsoever from any outside source with the exception of his or her payment of a salary by the people of the United States. How's that?
But how are they going to hold their power?
Well, that's their problem, not mine, you know, because then all of a sudden they got to come back and they got to talk to me, because once by that at that point they're actually responsible to the people.
Yeah, definitely.
So yeah, but if you get something like that in place, and you get public financing of campaigns, a lot of these other things solve themselves. By the same token, the Wall Street Journal had a story today about the hissy that Walmart is having, threatening its workers over Barack Obama's support for the Employee Free Choice Act. Now, the Employee Free Choice...
Wait, say that again. This is something I haven't heard. Could you run that by me one more
time?
Sure.
There's a Wall Street article today, Wall Street Journal article today. If you go to walmartwatch.com, you can get a link to it.
Okay.
And Walmart is having a hissy about and sliming Barack Obama to its workers, telling them that because Barack Obama supports something in Congress called the Employee Free Choice Act. In many ways, what the Employee Free Choice Act does is it affirms the First Amendment right to freedom of association, because it says that people who want to join a union have a right to join a union, and that they can join that union by sign, and they can organize their local or whatever by signing a card that says, I want to be in the union.
But what has that done to our businesses, historically speaking?
Pardon? I lost the end of that.
What has been the result of businesses doing that, historically speaking, like, say, for example, the steel industry?
The unions didn't destroy the steel industry.
Oh, no, I don't think that they destroyed it. No, I wouldn't say that they would destroy it, but it makes it very hard to compete globally. I'll put it like that.
I don't buy into that line of reasoning. Especially when you're talking about a Walmart, because what Walmart's been doing is they take their workers into captive audience meetings that the workers cannot leave without being fired, and they sit there and they slime union membership.
Are you familiar with Milton Friedman?
I checked in last week, and he is just getting done being basted over roasting coals in hell. Yeah, Milton Friedman was the Adolf Hitler of labor. Milton Friedman is just evil.
But when he talks about the shrinking world, what's your take on that?
Well, under Milton Friedman's policies of the shrinking world, the thing that's doing the most shrinking is the belly of the workers.
So, would you rather be employed? Well, for me, I want to be hired by a really, really rich guy. That way I can move up in his business and hopefully succeed and be very successful myself. And
Newsflash, Matt, really, really rich guys don't become really, really rich guys by paying generous salaries.
Yeah, people give them their money.
Insurance companies are just like insurance companies are not in the business of paying money out. They're in the business of taking money in.
Exactly.
But what I was saying earlier is, to the same extent that we could cure, one thing such as meaningful campaign finance reform and public financing of campaigns would bring a lot of solutions to our corruption and influence problems in Congress, bringing in something like the Employee Free Choice Act, where people can have a union and can thereby access affordable health care, can go a long way toward ending the health care crisis in this country. You know, sometimes there are simple solutions. Walmart will not go out of business if Walmart has to recognize a union. Okay? Walmart's not going to just close its doors and quit being Walmart if everybody who works there has a right to be in a union. I mean, for heaven's sake, when you consider, it was a couple of years ago when one of the Walton heirs died. All right? The heirs. They didn't do anything for a living. They just sat there and sucked up the inheritance of Sam Walton's work. All right? As the Bible said, it says, you know, neither did they tarry, neither did they labor. One of the Walmart heirs died, and his estate was valued at death at somewhere around, I believe, $30 billion. Never did a thing to earn it. Nothing. Not one thing. Except sit back and clip coupons. All right?
Well, I believe that's his choice as an American to be able to make that decision.
What decision did he make?
Do nothing. I mean, if you don't want to do anything, you should have that right to not want to do. If I want to be homeless and live on the street, I don't have to do anything. I can be homeless.
But people who are homeless aren't there by choice, Matt. This Walmart heir who dropped dead, there were no choices involved. He just happened to be born under a lucky sign and happened to be a Walmart heir. Okay? But the point that I'm trying to make is that Walmart is not going anywhere. Walmart pays its employees what it pays them in order to make those Walton heirs bigger billionaires. Okay? Who aren't doing any work in the first place. So to that end, you know, I've got a lot of sympathy with somebody who would like to make $15 an hour, who right now makes $8, who would like to make $15 an hour and maybe have some sort of a dignified retirement and be able to take their kids to the doctor when they're sick.
Well, we've seen time and time and time and time again that an increase in minimum wage only leads to a higher increase in inflation, therefore meaning giving you less dollars.
That is not one flows from the other. An increase in the minimum wage. You know what? I'll tell you what. I'll make you a trade. We pass a law that says every working person in America is a member of a union. And I, in return, will pass a law eliminating the minimum wage.
I'd have to think about that. I can't give you I can't start off an answer right now because that is. I'll give you credit. That's pretty good.
Because if everybody in this country is a member of the union and has health care and has a retirement and has a living wage, there's no need for a minimum wage. None whatsoever, because the collective bargaining agreement will address the issue of how much entry-level employees are paid. The collective bargaining agreement will address the issue of how much temporary workers are paid and what constitutes a temporary worker. The collective bargaining agreement will address apprenticeships and master craftsmen.
Do you think that the economy could thrive as well as it is today without illegal workers?
Without undocumented immigrants,
that get paid below minimum wage.
I think it's philosophically and morally it's a crime. Okay.
Yeah, it's modern day slavery. I totally agree.
Well, it's modern day slavery. It's also a long established practice of the United States. You know,
but it also shows a definite defiance by businesses to go out and be competitive regardless.
Wait.
To pay them less than minimum wage.
That's a language thing. They're not going out and being competitive. The guy, the contractor who drops by Home Depot every morning and hires a bunch of undocumented workers to go and work at his construction site and pays them what works out to maybe $3 an hour, he's not doing that to be competitive. He's doing that to go from driving a Corvette to driving a Ferrari. Because that's where those profits go. They don't go into
it. He probably drives a truck, but
to the job site he does. But when he puts on the khakis and the four popped collars on the polo shirts and puts the top down, he ain't putting the top down on a truck, I promise.
Well, I drive a Ford Taurus. What about you?
I drive a 1995 Dodge pickup truck. Proudly made in Mexico.
but do you see what I'm trying to say there with the economy thriving with illegal workers? Now I've heard that statement made numerous times that our economy couldn't survive without these illegal workers working really hard for the U.S. economy.
Well, apparently Lou Dobbs can't survive without undocumented immigrant labor. He rails about him every night, and he goes home, and he's got stable boys who take care of his daughter's horses who ain't got no green card.
So what would happen if he didn't do that? He would not be in the position he is today?
He would eat Chateaubriand one day less per month.
So you think he would be able to do that?
Sure he would.
illegal business.
Sure,
you
he would.
The economy as a whole could function.
I mean, look at it this way. We were talking about unions. I've mentioned on this program a number of times something that I really admire. The magazine of the Carpenters Union is printed half in English and half in Spanish because they have a commitment to offering the benefits of a union household, not just to folks whose people have been here for eight generations, but to people whose folks have been here for two or one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And when you take, you know, when you compare, and I'm biased, Matt. Please understand, I am biased. Because
well, I am too. I think we all are at heart. We just tend to deny it.
No. I'm biased in favor of organized labor, because I'm sitting here and I have the education that I have. I've had the advantages in my life that I have had. Everything that I have had can be traced directly back to the fact that my father joined a union. Because if he hadn't joined a union, he would have slaved away for half of what he made. And there would have been no college.
Mm-hmm.
There would have been no middle class upbringing. There would have been no nice middle class home. My mother wouldn't have been able to stay home and attend to my raising. You know, what organized labor offers America is actually that America that the conservatives keep talking about that they want. You know, the one where June Cleaver stays home and Ward goes to work every day and the Beeve and Wally come home and there's cookies on the table and all that stuff. That happens in union households because union workers are able to make it happen because they're paid a fair and decent living wage.
Are you familiar with Bendix Brakes?
Yes.
My dad worked for Bendix Brakes before it was a union. My dad is now a teacher at a very rural school. You know, he's a public servant, and that's where his heart is, and honestly for me as well. But before the union, at this Bendix Brakes, you know, my dad's got a 401k, and you know, the value of that 401k is tied to the value of the stock. Well, when the unions came about and they finally broke through and, you know, became official, the value of that stock dropped. The 401k wasn't worth as much. So he may have had more money in his pocket right then and there, but in the long run, it hurt him.
And that was the union's fault?
No. No, I'd say it was I don't think there's anybody to blame. I think it's an experiment that we can learn from.
You know,
and I think that it was a mistake, just my personal opinion, and I think my dad would agree. But there's many ways to look at it. I mean, I totally see what you're saying, but I've been there as well and experienced a slightly different effect.
Well, you know, there's one way of accomplishing that. I'd like to point out something else that I've brought up from time to time. And that is, you know, you're calling from Chattanooga. You're in Tennessee. You're toward the deep south. And there's an undercurrent of hatred. Pure, and I think you'll agree, pure unmitigated hatred for the burgeoning undocumented immigrant population. Fair statement?
Yeah, I would say, but it is not prevalent in the metropolitan area. I'd say it's more prevalent in the rural area.
Okay, but still, I think it obtains. Now you've got to ask yourself a question, Matt, and that is, given the fact that neither Tennessee nor Alabama nor Mississippi nor North and South Carolina nor any of the interior states in the United States that have significant undocumented worker populations growing in them now, none of those have a common contiguous border with any Hispanic language immigrant producing nation. Right?
Wait, could you run that by me again?
Well, it's okay, the short form. Alabama ain't got no border with Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Neither does South Carolina. Neither does Tennessee. So So you got to ask the question, why did the undocumented workers come to those states?
Because the businesses made it possible, and well, the businesses have indirectly said that we don't mind if you're illegal, just like child labor laws. I think you can fix the situation without
working. You're on the right track, but you haven't quite gotten there yet.
Okay.
Okay. Those states have those growing populations because of something called a right to work law.
Mm-hmm.
They were hammered over the heads of the people in so-called conservative-controlled southern states, hammer and tongs, in order to break unions. What they also did, however, and the irony is that they did it to people who supported politicians who supported right to work. What they did, Matt, is they broke the people who supported the politicians because they put those people in competition with folks who were willing to work for lower wages who would not have been able to compete with those for those lower wages had they not installed right-to-work legislation. And right-to-work legislation, to bring this full circle, is one of the darling bastard children of Milton Friedman.
Well, see, I'm not too keen on the right-to-work legislation. I'll admit I need to do a little bit more research on that. But you've definitely opened my eyes to that avenue of thinking. And so I just want to make clear, I said my dad teaches in a rural school because there's a lot of backwards thinking people out there. I just want to clear that up and say he's not backwards thinking. He's trying to educate the uneducated into, you know, bringing them into the modern society, I should say. So I just wanted to make that clear.
I didn't think there was any implied or overt bigotry in what you said. I'm a Southern boy, so the South holds. I hold a profound love for the South, and I hate when I catch my liberal brothers and sisters acting like the South is some sort of slime pit that's not worth worrying about. Oh, that.
Yeah, let the guys on before you.
Well, wait a minute. Mark is a Nashvillian.
He's a what?
He's a Nashvillian.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, oh yeah, that's where he was born.
I heard him today talking pretty harshly about Southerners. I guess I may not listen to him.
Well, no, we all get frustrated with our Southern brothers and sisters because of things like right to work, because of the fact that our Southern brothers and sisters tend to go to the polls and vote for somebody because they say, vote for me because I got conservative family values and I'm Jesus's best friend. And then he goes into the state house and does everything contrary to anything that Jesus would support. Cutting wages, cutting benefits, cutting outreach to the poor, leaving an entire segment of the population damn near drowning and dying on the Mississippi Gulf Coast after Katrina and in New Orleans and the bayous. Ain't none of that Jesus, but if you try to talk to him, well, but he's got his conservative family values, and, you know, he's not one of them liberals. Well, you know, where I come from in Alabama, Matt, there wouldn't be so much as electricity if it wasn't for liberals and liberal policies like the Rural Electrification Act and the Tennessee Valley Authority, with which I'm sure you're quite familiar.
Oh, yeah. The Tennessee Valley was in the darkness.
And yellow fever, malaria, unproductive earth, uncontrolled flooding made it awful hard to live there. Matt, I love this conversation, and I hope you won't be a stranger, and I hope you'll chime in again.
Okay, we'll do, buddy.
All right, you take care now. I've enjoyed it.
Well, hey, let me leave you with this. I thought of a shirt idea. Okay?
All right.
On the front, it says, please don't kill my baby. All right? But on the back, it says, don't send them to war.
Nice.
What do you think about that?
Nice. Works on a number of levels.
Yeah.
All right. Take care and have a great weekend. You hear?
Hey, you too. Thanks a lot.
Bye now.
Bye.
With any luck, Matt will tell others about what conversation radio really, really means. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, hello, Bob. It's your night to talk to Tennesseans.
Hot diggity. Let's keep it rolling. from Chattanooga to somewhere north of Nash Vegas.
You got it, bro. And Matt, it is just astonishingly wonderful that you called and you hung with Bob and you pushed points back and forth and you just found out what a remarkable enterprise conversation radio really can be. I really hope it dawns on Matt, and I'm sure it will. He's a bright guy. It's going to dawn on him, my Lord, I just had this very informed guy that, you know, I was about 50-50 on the issues with, and he never rang me off. He never called me an idiot. He and I had a great conversation.
So, well, if nothing else, we're going to win the manners war against right-wing hate radio, David.
Well, only if they let us. Now, before I get around to cap and trade and all that carbon trade out stuff and whatever that's called, let's get back around to this illegal immigrant labor. If there is a kid in Portland, Tennessee, where I live, and he grew up in a working class household, he probably had a room. He probably had a room with an air conditioner. He probably had an Xbox. He may have a car his junior year in high school, all of his own, spending money. He probably had his own TV and a cell phone. Okay, he leaves high school and says, I'm going to go to work. Well, there's a guy that is doing subcontracting for a bigger guy that builds the buildings that must be built for the industry in this area. And the guy says to him, okay, kid, here's what I got for you. You're going to move into a two-bedroom apartment. You're going to sleep with another man. It's not going to have air conditioning that always works. I'm going to pay you $7 an hour, and you're going to send half of it back to your mother. That kid is going to absolutely laugh at him if he doesn't try to deck him, right?
Yes. Once he gets done laughing,
but the fella from Chiapas that paid $1,500 and risked his life to get here is going to say, wow, that much money? But he's going to say it in Spanish or a dialect that isn't Spanish to the guy that brought him to the man that'll pay him $7 cash so he can go to the H.G. Hill store and wire $100 a week back to Mamacita in Chiapas. You know you've seen the movie, right?
Yeah, I have. Now,
that's why it makes my ancient ass red when I hear somebody say, and I love you, Matt, I care about you, don't ever say again Americans won't do a certain job. It has to be done by foreigners. Have you ever seen the most dangerous catch? What is that thing where they go crab fishing?
Oh, yeah, the most dangerous catch.
All right.
Discovery Channel?
Oh, no.
You couldn't? No.
Yes.
No, there's a job this American would not do.
My turn.
Okay.
Could there be a more death-defying, terrifying, debilitating, I could lose a hand, I could be frostbitten, I could go over the side and never be seen by anybody in my life again? But I know kids when I lived in a different Portland, Oregon, that signed on for that. In 3 months' time, those kids could come back with $40,000 if you were the first kid on the boat. But your ass was on the line 24/7. So don't, no, leave off this business of Americans won't. Americans won't for $7 an hour.
Americans can't for $7 an hour.
No.
Because Americans aren't living in the hotel with four other guys and sending half of it home.
Exactly. But if that job were something resembling, you know, not even full union scale, but most of the way there, kids would work construction. Kids would pick fruit. If there's enough money involved, the American worker will do anything. If there is a balance of a full day's pay for a full day's work.
Well, exactly, David. You remind me of Juanita, to whom we talk frequently, and she's talked about how she wound up, how she grew up, and she's talked about the fact that that's exact. You know, her parents did work on farms, and Americans did work on farms. Americans did do that labor until Americans were driven out of the market. And they weren't driven out because any particular ethnicity is a better fruit picker. They were driven out by policies that made it impossible for them to continue to do so.
Some people tried to get a pittance per hundredweight for tomato pickers in Florida, which would have meant someone would have made $12 to $14 a day more money to work 12 hours a day to bring in tomatoes for your Taco Bell item. But no, it was beaten down, and it was beaten down by people that wanted the undocumented worker that has no voice, no way to say anything back to the man.
Utterly powerless.
Utterly powerless. And just like this routine about this horrific meatpacking outfit in, I think it's Iowa, that wanted to bust the effort by a few to create a workers' association that kind of sort of resembled a union. So the next thing you know, rather than come in and say, we'll just deport these workers, no, they went to these men that didn't even speak English and said they had creatively gone on to identity search crime, and they didn't even know what it meant. They gave a guy $40 to have a social security number that wouldn't bounce. That's all they did.
And in fact, that Postville, Iowa plant also did a lot of payment in cash, and it was management people who were selling the bogus documents.
Exactly. It's just as you said. It's the big guy wanting the caviar and the huge obscene steak every night rather than five nights a week. Let's go on to Captain Trey for just a moment.
Yeah, take all the time you need. It's Friday.
No, it won't take long at all. I want to make sure everybody understands the absurdity of this carbon offset, cap and trade, whatever you want to call it. I'm going to make a very extreme but legitimate example for everybody listening, especially you right-wingers. I am a business owner. I have 100 women over the age of 50 sewing quilts. In a full-on cap-and-trade system, I have a carbon footprint allowance. I'm not going to make a whole lot of carbon by having elderly women sewing quilts. On the other end of the stick, I'm a guy in the middle of nowhere creating gourmet charcoal, and I'm burning
Jesus.
It in the oldest possible way. I am putting stuff in the air that would just make God hold his nose. I have a carbon allowance. Oops. I'm way over my carbon allowance in a full-on carbon offset system. I go over to the guy that would never create any sort of CO2, no matter what. Oh, that's the guy that has the little old ladies sewing quilts. And I pay him money to have his carbon allowance. That should explain it all. It's smoke and mirrors. It's three-card Monty.
And nothing gets fixed.
Nothing gets reduced. Nothing gets reduced. Now, that's on the little old lady scale, that's zero. On the guy making charcoal from a 1,000-year-old method, that's a 10, with a bullet.
And I do have to comment, David. I know where the gourmet charcoal comment comes from. Because you and I are such barbecue geeks that we pay attention to stuff like gourmet charcoal.
Before that son of a bitch was self-made, would be run out of business, you and I would have a tool shed full.
Oh, yeah, bring it in on pallets.
Yeah, well, we would. We would be bad dogs. No cookies at bedtime for us.
Well, the funny thing is that for those who think it doesn't, that business exists. Okay.
Oh, I'm sure.
I toddle over across, and you know, I do it for, you know, we all know that I love to make me some ribs and barbecued pulled pork pig sandwiches and things like that. And that involves smoke.
You get to watch them eat it now. You don't get it.
Right. But that involves smoke, and they haven't come up with a solar smoker yet.
No.
And I'm just being a little bit of a horse's ass about that. But if you go and you buy your Kingsford, or your old Biz, or, you know, any, or Lord God knows, Matchlight.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. Oh, God, no, you can't.
Yeah, Matchlight is the Popov's vodka of charcoal.
Oh, yeah. Oh, Lord. Yeah, I mean, even the ash smells like kerosene. Don't do it, boys. Don't do it.
But even the briquettes are made of charcoal that's glued together with crap that you don't want burning under your food.
Oh, I know. Kingsford is, no, it's not cool.
So they sell these bags of gourmet charcoal, which I buy, and it's cheaper than Kingsford.
Really?
Yeah, but it's honest to God, it's real live burnt wood charcoal. It is wood that is burned in an almost oxygen-free atmosphere so that it combusts without burning and you get charcoal. And you know what I realized? You know what I realized I'm buying?
Uh-oh.
Because I started looking at it, David. It don't look like burnt wood sticks. This stuff is burnt pallets.
Oh, that's too funny. Any leftover Chinese-made nails in it?
You're going exactly where I was going. Because, there is literally a garbage industry in China. We're not just getting their goods. We're shipping the stuff, their goods that turn into junk back to them. And I saw a photograph once of this child, a Chinese child, sorting through a mound of old computers that was probably 50 feet high. Sorting out stuff to recycle the gold, recycle the copper, all of that. But the metaphor you have chosen, the gourmet charcoal, I'll never look at my smoker the same way again.
Somehow there is a great spirit goddess dispensation, you know, coming your way for good deeds in other areas. Some sort of a properly orientated carbon trade-off.
Yay! Yeah, that's what I need. That's what I need. I need to get in touch with the guy who's cooking with the solar smoker and engage in a cap-and-trade program with him.
Find that guy that, you know, lives on yogurt he makes himself from, you know, cows that...
Nanny goat's milk.
Themselves.
It's very sweet.
All right. We've gone as far as we can go, but this can't...
Let me just not let you off the hook yet. I feel like a real dick right now, because I feel like that there are people who could perceive that I am making fun of legitimate efforts to get away from that kind of stuff, and I'm not.
Neither am I. I'm making fun of our low-grade recalcitrance at really addressing the things we should address easily and quickly. But, you know, it's good old boy humor. Yeah, we're going to do that, but we're going to spit over our shoulder and take a drink before we do.
Yeah, and the fact of the matter is, the answer is not cap and trade or carbon credits or carbon taxes or anything like that. Because when you said, I'm going to use an extreme example, you came up with a beautiful example, David. That of the quilting bee company versus gourmet charcoal. I love that, and I'm going to hang on to it. But I thought you were going to go and say, on the one hand, you've got a guy who goes to church 7 days a week every time they open the door, and has tattooed on the small of his back, "Lips that touch liquor shall never touch mine." Just pure, really straight guy. And on the other hand, you've got a guy who has a $4,000 a day Afghan white habit.
Oh, you're flying way higher and way faster than I can.
And the guy with the $4,000 a day Afghan white habit goes to the straight guy and says, "Here, you do $1,000 a day of my Afghan white for me."
Yikes. I'm sticking to quilts.
No, yours works better. I tend to think in addiction terms. Because where I was going with that is the answer is not to give the really straight guy a Jones. The answer is to get the $4,000 a day habit guy off the junk.
It took me too long, but I'm catching up. I agree. Good.
And we got to get off the junk. You know, yes, if drilling offshore, let's assume for a minute that I'm sick to death of paying $4 a gallon for gasoline, and they tell me that drilling offshore will drop my gasoline prices to the 29 cents and 9 tenths that I remember as a child. Well, my lizard brain response, David, is to say, "Damn, drill twice."
Yeah, sink them all.
Yeah. On the other hand, however, that is the $4,000 a day junkie habit guy's response too.
Precisely. Have you heard the? And it may have actually been on some segment that you've done. Have you heard the bit about should someone build a solar farm in the desert Southwest? Have you heard about and the size of the solar farm? Have you heard this rationale?
No, I haven't. Preston was telling us last night that Nellis Air Force Base has gone to like 50% solar.
No. This is another extreme example. This is to help us dramatize this. There's a couple of numbers, and I know that everybody goes blind when anyone mentions numbers, but I'll try to do it very explicitly and not get too sideways on it. If existing solar conversion technology, sunlight over to electricity coming out of a wire, if today's technology were employed and somewhere in the desert Southwest, pick a state, a 92-by-92-mile solar farm could be built. So now that's big.
Yeah,
that's a big.
Let's just call it 100 square miles.
It's more than that.
100 by 100.
Well, all right. So it's,
round numbers.
What is? All right, it's the size of Connecticut, but it's a lot smaller than Arizona. If that solar farm could be built, and it would probably take 8 to 10 years to build it, using today's technology and today's efficiencies. If that solar farm could be built, and over that 8 to 10 year period, the wires could be strung, it could power America.
Yeah, period. No wind farms, no solar on anybody's roof.
No.
No, yeah, I have heard that. Yeah, it does. And then there's the extension of that, again, using existing technology. Not space age stuff, existing technology. You can take the next leap and go from that to a solar powered steam turbine, and then it gets even exponentially more powerful, because the coal doesn't generate the power, the BTUs do, that creates the steam that turns the turbine that spins the magneto that sends the power out the line.
So this is no one need to be subjected to Mr. Ozone Man jokes. No one need to be subjected to, that's 100 years down the road. It could happen a hell of a lot faster than getting that nickel off the $6 gas that would happen if we absolutely maximize the offshore drilling.
Yes, you just made a pretty little bow out of tying those two ends together. It will take it would take less time to build that solar farm than it would to realize a damn 10-cent cut in gas prices by drilling offshore.
And let's just do one more little aspect of that one before I go on to a slightly different one. Once we build that farm, we get to pay about 5% a year to maintain it until hell freezes over. It never runs out, boys.
Okay, and yeah. What? Just one more. One more little bow on the package. There's a whole bunch of people making good green-collar wages, maybe union jobs, with health care and retirement and benefits, paying into Social Security, and all of a sudden the Republicans can't stand up and say, it's going broke! There are simple solutions, David. And those are all, without fail, the simple solutions are the elegant ones.
They're elegant, but Bob, all right, get your dump button ready. They're elegant, Bob, but they don't do a goddamn thing for quarterly profits for existing contributors to the Republican Party.
Precisely. They are not good for the buggy whip industry.
Thank you.
Oh, you get the toaster tonight. With the bagel sensor. With the bagel sensor.
With the automatic bagel sensor? All right. I'm going to invite friends over Sunday morning. I'll make coffee that'll set your teeth on edge. Yes.
Maybe Bloody Marys or mimosas for after.
Now we're gonna get some coffee and some bagels down before we get serious.
Well, that's what I mean.
We desperately need
a little clamato, a little Bombay Dry.
Oh, baby, I love it when you talk dirty.
David, take care.
Bob, thanks for letting me make a mess of your program. It's always such a good time for me. How was it for you?
Call me. See ya. Bye.
Call me. See ya.
Oh, God. That's what can happen in this country when we start thinking about things. Inside the box, it's do we drill or do we not drill? Outside the box is build a solar farm in Nevada. That's too complicated for the average GOP money in the lobbyist's pocket brain, though, isn't it? Keep rolling on. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, man, how you doing?
Oh, hey, man.
What's going on?
You know, I'm having a blast tonight.
Well, I'm listening. It's a very good show. I always enjoy Brother David. I have seen information on that project that he was talking about. And that is possible. And that's, you know, these people have, well, they've managed to crush all hope and, you know, that's why people don't believe that, you know. That's why people buy the drill, drill, drill.
Right. And you know, I want to take what David was talking about and extend it just a little bit.
But I want to get to Matt.
We absolutely will. But I want to suggest that maybe that solar farm in Nevada might ought to be owned by the people of the United States.
Well, yeah, it should. You know, and David kind of reminded me of something that I was going to call about the other night, and you know, that's the. We'll have to pay a 5% fee or something to maintain it every year, and that'll be it. Well, you know, I'm an old Bob. I remember, you know, atomic power. Am I correct in saying that Shippingport, Pennsylvania, was the first atomic power plant in this country?
It was one of the first. I mean, I think the first little reactor was built at Oak Ridge, Tennessee.
Okay. I mean, commercial.
Yeah, right, yeah.
But anyway, I mean, at that time, I remember, I don't know if it was President Eisenhower himself or somebody in the administration, that nuclear power was, you know, going to solve everything. won't even have to have an electric meter. Everybody will just pay $5 a month, and that'll be it.
Yeah.
You know, and
that was back when we thought that we could trust American for-profit power companies to build and maintain nuclear power plants.
Well, exactly, and the 5% maintenance fee is also, you know. I mean, somehow, even if we do this, you know, some giant corporation will get a hold of it, and you're still going to have to pay a pretty good price for electricity. But, you know.
Yeah. But, you know, for
clean energy, you know, no drilling, no nothing, don't have to deal with the Saudis and all that.
Oh, and yeah, a little free advertisement here for people who want to see what is possible with current technology. MrSolar.com, MrSolar.com. There are kits out there that you can get off the grid for $10,000.
Yeah.
Now, what if we had tax credits in this country? I'm not talking about tax credits for Enron. I'm talking about real world tax credits so that people could get off the grid.
Yeah,
And then an industry. An industry rises up around the very concept of helping non-experts maintain their solar systems.
That's exactly right. And one would call those green jobs.
One would.
Yes, one would. But Matt, can I get the Matt?
Go, yeah.
Do you know, I mean, first-time caller?
Oh, yeah.
Well, I hope he calls back. He sounds...
Oh, I love the conversation.
Well, I like people that ask questions, you know. And I would like to offer Matt a different way of looking at things also. You know, unions, you know, all of them, workers, unions. And, you know, what is the, in my business, ABC, Associated Builders and Contractors, blah, 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 who, you know, fight up constantly. But what is that but a group of contractors and, you know, employers who have gotten together as a, to, you know, advance their cause? Is that not a union?
Yeah. I mean, well, that's like I've said a million times, if I've said it once, that the one of the most powerful unions in the United States is one, the American Medical Association, and two,
yes,
the American Bar Association.
Yes. You know, a group of people that join together to advance their common cause. And that's all unions are. And, you know, that's all they are. If people, unions and employers have to sit down and agree to a contract. Well, you know, once you agree to that contract, you have given your word. And, I don't know, call me silly, but I kind of expect you to uphold that word. Working people, the only thing, and, you know, and this goes beyond, you know, carpenters and people in my trade, building and construction trades. I mean, if you decided that you are going to be an employee, whether you're a lawyer or an engineer or a scientist or whatever you are, that is your trade. And if you're going to be an employee, the only thing you have, the only product that you have to offer for sale is your time.
And your labor.
And translates to labor to me.
Yeah, and frankly, I'm one of those people who paints the concept of labor with a very broad brush.
I think a lawyer can be called, if a lawyer works for somebody that has 18 lawyers working for him, isn't he a laborer?
Sure he is, because
he's
earning his bread by the sweat of his brain, where somebody else earns their bread by the sweat of their brow. And I consider
it involves taking up time away from my family and me and the things that I like to do.
I'm willing to give you
that time if you're willing to pay this price.
Yes.
Absolutely. So
what the hell's wrong with that?
So a financial analyst who is among 200 financial analysts who maybe makes $500,000 a year working for an investment bank.
He's still a laborer.
Unless he owns the investment bank.
Exactly.
He is a worker.
Yes, he is. And, you know, that's a proud occupation.
Damn right.
That's a very proud, you know. So, you know, I don't know. And I don't remember everything, but Matt said, made some reference to an experiment. I don't know if he meant the unions were an experiment.
Oh, I think that's when he was talking about, he was talking about Bendix Brakes.
About who?
Bendix Brakes.
Okay, I'm not familiar.
Auto
parts manufacturer?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
And it was one of those scenarios where the argument was being made that organizing the shop had been a net loss, and in fact it's a similar argument to what was made or what's being made by Walmart in this article I was referencing, Wayne, out of the Wall Street Journal. Walmart is screaming, I mean screaming, at their workers over the Employee Free Choice Act, and
I read. Well, I don't think the journal, but I've read about it.
Yeah. Barack Obama supports the Employee Free right. Choice Act, and you might not have a job if you vote for Barack Obama.
Be afraid. Be very afraid.
All they got is fear.
Yeah.
All
they got.
But it's the same thing. You're not going to be able to have it. But the argument is made in the Wall Street Journal article that Wall Street is saying, well, you're just going to have to pay a bunch of money in union dues, and the union won't do you any good.
Yep.
Well, but I'm glad you called because I wanted to ask you this question out of that story. You can't speak to, say, the United Food and Commercial Workers collective bargaining agreement or anything, but just generally speaking, you're a guy, you're a member of a union, and you make $15 an hour. Now, out of that $15 an hour, let's establish a range of how much of that could go to dues. You know,
let me tell you personal experience.
Okay.
What I pay. Okay. When I got in the union, I made, $400 a week before I got in the union.
Okay.
$400 a week.
All right.
I got in the union and, I made, $1,100 a week. And, with the carpenters, okay, the carpenters' dues is $15 a month. Plus there's a work assessment of 4.5% of your gross, which you only pay when you're working.
Okay. But,
if you're not working, you don't have a gross. There's, apprenticeship training, there's, different things like that. I would say that amounted to $65, $70 a week. Now, I just more than doubled my pay.
Right.
And I'm giving back $70 a week. I don't have any problem with that whatsoever.
I'm calling that a bargain.
Not at all. And, and our money goes to, and we do great things with our money. The Carpenters Union, just the Carpenters Union internationally spends $100 million a year on training. $100 million. I mean, that's.
Yeah, making sure stuff gets built right and built safe.
Exactly. And our people know all the new, green buildings are a very big thing new products coming out, new ways of doing things and all that. Our people are all on the leading edge of that because we have classes and training centers and bring people in to, this is what we do. And, unions are a very good thing. Unions, and I hope Matt is still listening. I truly hope he calls back sometimes. Unions built the middle class, and not
Yeah, that's not. That's not
saying. I think the highest union, like representation, or you know, people that were involved in unions in this country was like 37%.
Yeah, I was going to say 33, 34, and that's during the Eisenhower administration.
Exactly. I think it was 37. I could be wrong. But look what those people did. We built the middle class.
Yeah.
That built the middle class. And, you know, I've said here and, you know, a million times, with all the problems that we seem to have in this country, if you take care of the working people, if you and the working people aren't, they're not greedy, you know.
No.
They're not greedy at all. If you take care of the working people, provide them with a living wage, provide them with health insurance, provide them with a retirement with dignity, you would be absolutely amazed at the problems that seem to have solved themselves.
Well, and you, I was going to say, on a number of occasions, Wayne, you have referred to the fact that you are actively involved in trying to put yourself out of business.
That's what I do as a construction worker. Oh, you mean as a union representative?
Yeah.
That's exactly right.
Because
if you treat your employees right, they have no need for people like me. You know, I always use as an example, there was in New Hampshire, I think it was, Owens Mills.
Yeah.
Is that the name of it? It was, Gina used to buy all kind of material from them. They make fabric and...
A textile house.
Exactly. Well, that place, I believe it was in New Hampshire. And that place burned to the ground.
Yeah, it was in Massachusetts.
Massachusetts? Okay. Are you getting things on email?
No.
About the story? Or
No. I just remember.
Okay. The guy turned, the place burned down. I don't know how many employees he had. It seemed like, I don't know, 800 or something. Told them all, don't worry about a thing. You're not going to miss any paychecks. You'll still have your insurance. We're going to rebuild this building and, you know, this whole thing, and we're going to keep going. And he did exactly that. Now, you go up there and see if them people want to join a union. You know, they'll tell me that we have no need for you, pal.
Yeah.
And you don't. I mean, you know, if you treat people properly.
Yeah, and it's when you get into that situation again. And I don't think I'm exaggerating, Wayne, when I said that the guy who goes to Home Depot and hires the guys for $3 a day, that he's not plowing the difference between that and paying a living wage back into the company.
No, he isn't. Listen, you know, all the fights that I have about prevailing wage, and we have study after study, and there are a few places that have given us excellent examples, and one of them is Ohio. Ohio, for, I don't know exactly, 1997 to 2003 or so, in 97, they eliminated prevailing wage rates on any public school. You know, you no longer had to pay prevailing wage rates on if you were building a public school. In 5 years, the cost of building a school never went down, and in some cases was higher. And then after the end of the 5 years, they reinstated prevailing wage, because all it translated into were the costs were the same. The only difference was the contractor was making way more money, and the men that were building the school were now working for a third of what they used to work for. They didn't have health insurance, they didn't have pensions, and they barely made enough money to live. And, you know, that's, you know.
And what you
that's
just...
That's the truth. Yeah. Now, I'll show you the study, you know.
And frankly, that's a day in the life of right to work America.
That's exactly what it is.
If they're getting the one third.
I was really, you know, I was listening to you talking to Matt and I'm saying that, and I'm sitting there going, right to work, right to work.
But you know, and you're not a Southerner. You're good Pittsburgh man.
I'm a Yankee, for Christ's sake. Hey, what the hell am I gonna? There's a question. You know, Limbaugh got that $500 million. He's talking about buying a football team.
What in the hell are you gonna do if he? Because he loves the Steelers.
What am I gonna do?
He loves them Steelers.
And, you know, I understand, I don't know, how many Rooney kids are there? There's four of them? Two of them want to dump it, and the other two are trying to save it or something?
Oh, brother, you just opened up a nightmare for yourself.
Oh, my God, I don't know what to do about it. If Limbaugh is part owner of that team, what the hell do I do?
My gut reaction is you got to find the... You know, field hockey's pretty fun to watch. Lacrosse is really cool. Rugby's awesome.
My golly. I don't know. How'd I get off on that?
Because you're a Yankee. One of the things you can say about the South is that, in many ways, right to work, Wayne, is just a reinstitution of Southern slavery.
That's exactly what. Only white people are included now.
Right, but 160 years ago, anything that was worth going into, any nice building, any school, any university building, any public building, was built in the South with slave labor. Okay?
Yeah.
Well, Atlanta is an absolute marvelous beauty of a city. It's like it sits in a park. If you ever fly into Atlanta, it's gorgeous. It's trees, 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 trees,
never
trees.
Never been to Atlanta.
The Louis Grizzard used to call it the city in the park.
Okay.
And it had this building renaissance that started long about the time that I was there, and they've completely changed the skyline of Atlanta. And it's beautiful. It's good glass and steel and concrete and golden copper top domes and gold domes. And, oh, God, it's just breathtaking. But you know what? I would say that a majority of that stuff was built, Wayne, by the same sort of slave labor, or the same philosophically equivalent slave labor that built the Atlanta that the Yankees burnt down.
I wouldn't doubt that at all.
And that is a mark of public shame, regardless of what issues I may have with state.
Did the legislature pass that apology before they skipped town?
The House?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a non-binding resolution. There was no recorded vote. It was all just voice vote.
Okay.
And it was just really, really charming because our buddy, the right-wing sleazebag, Glenn Beck.
Yeah.
He said that the apology for slavery by the House of Representatives is an affront to the principles of Christianity. Because he had
right. It was an affront to the system of Christianity as the Christian.
Well, there's that too. Yeah.
He had
Ron Paul on, and Ron Paul said. I know, yeah, Ron, when you mention Ron Paul, you got to chuckle a little bit, too. Ron Paul said, but when it comes to these apologies, you know, why should you and I make the apologies? Why should I apologize for you through a vote in Congress? At the same time, you know, we personally weren't responsible, you know, for that. And Glenn Beck said, yes, I think it. Honestly, it is a front. I'm a Christian. It's a front to the principles of Christianity.
I'm so sick of these hypocritical Christians.
Oh, but here's the punchline, Wayne. Here's the punchline. Forgiveness. Forgiveness. This country, half this country, fought the other half and died to free and say enough. This is wrong. We were washed in blood. I know, I mean, good heavens. There's nothing worse than slavery. Why are we doing this and concentrating on this now? Forgiveness, forgiveness. You know, I don't have it memorized or anything, Wayne, but I think the New Testament is just, especially the first three books that actually have something to do with that brown-skinned the Nazarene carpenter.
Yeah, huh?
Most of that book is taken up with forgiveness, forgiveness. You know, that stuff that Glenn Beck thinks is so silly. Fortunately for him, he gets to be a millionaire for doing that kind of stuff, but that's just me being jealous.
isn't the American way. Isn't that wonderful? Isn't that wonderful? These people are such hypocrites. I mean, the savage thing in autism, you know, I happen to be the father of an autistic child. And, I mean, that kind of hate, it's totally disgusting. Then you have to deal with these Christians who own and operate a radio station that you used to work for, but they'll broadcast that guy without any shame. Without any, you know.
Oh, yeah.
They're good Christians.
Oh, yeah. And, well,
they allow that hate because they get, you know, I don't know, did they get some money from it? That people want to advertise on the idiot show or what, you know. But it's, go ahead and do that. But then don't tell me what a great Christian you are in the next breath. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I really, really do.
You know, be what you are, man. You know, but don't call yourself a Christian with all these things that you supposedly believe in. But you broadcast this guy's show every day, 5 days a week.
No, sorry. No.
No.
No, you put paid to Christianity when you do something like that.
No. But one more point I got,
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry. I didn't mean it. Listen, my poor little brain is worrying about the Steelers now. You see what you do to me?
Well, yeah, listen, that's a very big concern, Bob. I mean, my God. I can't switch.
I mean, Limbaugh gets hold of the Steelers. The next thing you know, the God Almighty, the quarterback's on dope.
Yeah, exactly. There you go, man.
You know, I mean, we'd have to. The football players have to be drug tested. I guess we'd have to probably institute a drug testing regimen for the ownership if Limbaugh got hold of any football team.
I'd vote for that. Don't believe he'd pass either.
No.
I don't know, pal. But here's something I argued with this for Matt. In right-to-work states and things like that, you know, we've had, you know, countless people run for state legislature from this area that advocate right-to-work. And one of them was, do you remember that guy, Carpenter?
Yeah.
I think he's from Summers County.
Yeah.
He's a teacher. A member of the AFT, American Federation of Teachers.
Yeah, that would be a union.
That's a union. And during his campaign, he advocates right to work. And he was on Faces show. And I called him up and I said, how can you be a member of AFT and, you know, advocate right to work? Well, blah, 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 blah. You know, I don't know. You know, he went on with some crazy stuff. And I said, listen, what you guys don't understand is that we already have right to work in West Virginia. He said, we do. I said, sure we do. I said, if you're working someplace and a majority of those people want to form a union and join a union and you don't want to, you have a right to go to work somewhere else. And that's, you know, that's a fundamental right we all have.
Yeah.
So practice it. You know, but don't make me.
No. That betrays the fundamental bigotry of the position, though, doesn't it, Wayne?
Yes. And the Employees Free Choice Act, you know, well, we need a Democratic president in order to do that. And, well, I see monumental things happening from that. And, you know, how many people are without health insurance in this country?
50 million?
Yeah, something like that. Put half of them in a union. Right now, half of that goes away. Well, actually, it'd be more than half that. If you could do, you know, those are all.
I mean, there's kids in there, there's non-employed spouses, sure.
Right. You get, 50% of the working people who join union, and then, you know, they bring along 25% of the rest of the population.
And then we can afford, and then we can afford to really talk about serious universal health care too.
Yes, we could.
Because the cost on that goes down, because, you know, the people earning good union wages, Wayne, they don't need universal health care then.
Right. Exactly. So, it's, well, good show, man, and I, like I say, I was pleasantly surprised by that guy, Matt.
Oh, I hope he becomes a friend.
I do too.
Because, you know, you and I have a lot of talks and stuff. You know how I feel about trying to really, honest to God, get, you know, not like you get on the wingnut shows where people scream at each other, but an honest to God debate and dialogue about what is needed to fix this. I don't think anybody now is willing to say that the country isn't damaged, broken. We gotta, you know, we're the American people. We don't just sit around and let stuff sit there wrecked. We fix what's broke.
And the way that happens is, you know, what's offered here, conversation radio. And, you know, and I mean, I'm glad with somebody with different views has, you know, well, calls. You know, we need more of that. And everybody's welcome. We don't bite. What's a guy say that costs extra?
Yeah. well, boss, you have yourself a good night. All right.
All right, man. Same to you.
All right,
talking to you.
I'm going to have bad dreams about Limbaugh and the Steelers now.
No,
I wish the hell you hadn't done that.
No, man. I'm sorry. It came to me the other day when somebody said that to me. I said, "Oh my God."
Myron Cope will get out of the dirt.
Yeah.
Jack Fleming will rise from the shadows of the grave.
Where's Greenwood? Where's LC at? Who's he coaching for? We need him back.
All right, man. I'll talk to you later.
Okay, pal.
See ya.
Bye.
Bye. All this uplifting stuff, and in the middle of it, he drops, hey. Yeah, and you know what? That could be a Limbaugh front, you know, talking about the Rams. That guy talks about the Steelers a hell of a lot more than he talks about the Rams. He's a Steelers fan. Oh, and get his filthy mitts on it? Ooh. What would you do? You know, your terrible towel becomes a toxic towel? You know, yeesh. You get the Heinz Field would only have seats allowed on the right? Ugh. Scary stuff. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Preston.
Hey, Preston.
I'm in the union, actually. The American Federation of State, County, and Municipal Employees. I think among the government sector, unionization is around 12 or 15% or so, higher than the private sector. That's why they're seeking to privatize so many government jobs, to take away those benefits of what they consider spoiled employees. And end this 40-hour-a-week stuff.
Well, yeah, and that's why we've got these ignorant little martinets running the Transportation Security Administration. Remember when they were setting all that up, Preston, and there was a fight in Congress over the fact that Democrats wanted them to be able to organize, and the Republicans said, for national security purposes, they cannot have a union.
Yep.
And so you've got high turnover, you've got crappy benefits, and you've got these weird little freaks who make who make women express milk from lactating breasts in order to prove that their breasts aren't bombs? I mean,
right. And, you know, there are certainly issues with unions. You know, there's misspent money and all kinds of things. I was reading a book called State of the Union. Excellent reporter. Wrote a book about unions. And he's sympathetic, for sure, but he has criticisms of the unions. They misuse or underuse media oftentimes and all kinds of things. But
I don't think there's any member of a union that actually cares about his union that doesn't have active criticisms.
Yeah.
You know, there are valid ones. And, you know, I don't play the ostrich game with that any more than I do with the problems that our own side of the debate in a larger sense faces. But I also think that a union household is by far and away ahead of the curve as compared to a non-union household as a matter of general statistical, you know, truth.
Yep, that's true. And they, as Bob was saying, they perform such a wide array of functions. I mean, helping people do their jobs right, do them safely, you know, providing an organized voice against capital, which is our aggregated capital, which is extremely well organized with the National Association of Manufacturers and all these chambers of commerce and all kinds of trade associations. They don't have a problem with collective, you know, action when it's on their side of the class war. And it's when it's labor doing it.
Well, then it's class war when labor does it.
Right, right.
But, you know, the fact of the matter is, Preston, when you get right down to cases, you can make a rather compelling argument that within the framework as laid out in The Wealth of Nations, a union shop comes closer to the definitions that Adam Smith put forth than does a non-union shop.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, Adam Smith is so misrepresented and so exploited by, you know, the other side. It's ridiculous.
Well, yeah, it's like what the other side does with Jesus. They mistake him for Rambo, whereas the other side also mistakes Adam Smith for Milton Friedman.
Yep, you said it. You said it. Bob also mentioned he has a child with autism.
Wayne, yeah.
Wayne, I'm sorry. I missed the name. Wayne in Pittsburgh.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Well, no, Wayne lives here in West Virginia. Wayne's the boss.
Oh. Okay.
But he is a proud son of Pittsburgh.
Okay. Great. Well, recently, just yesterday, actually, the House voted to ban something called phthalates.
Yes.
And you heard about that.
Yeah, that's one of those really harder to say than it is to read words, P-H-T-H-L-A-T-E-S, and, you know, you want to buy a vowel between the H and the T.
Yep.
But phthalates, and yes, poisonous things.
Yeah, and for your listeners, it's a substance that's been used in manufacturing things like children's toys to make the plastic more flexible. There are plenty of alternatives that work perfectly well, but again, there are people protecting their buggy whip niche, and they don't particularly care if it's a toxic substance, if they can make a buck off of it. Anyway, Europe has banned this stuff years ago, and it's created other business opportunities and protected their kids. We finally got around to doing it. But one of the effects of this substance, some people believe, is the rise in autism rates. And I think that's why we heard Michael Savage say what he said.
Oh, the chickens come home to roost, because he is, after all, a corporate spokes freak.
Yep, that's right.
And I also noticed, Preston, and I don't mean to over-talk you, but I pulled up short on you again, and I apologize.
That's okay.
The other thing I noticed is that, yes, we banned the phthalates, but it was announced that we won't do anything that, you know, it won't take effect before the Christmas season. So Toys R Us and Kids R Fun and Mattel and Hasbro and all the corporate, the poison factories in China don't have to worry about it. We can poison our children for one more season where we celebrate the birth of the Prince of Peace.
Yeah, and don't worry about your stock value going down, because we'll continue dumping this stuff. We'll just move it over to a third world country that understands free markets and doesn't have all these regulations that stop free enterprise.
How is it, Preston, that all the unfree people always wind up being the ones who get the free market rammed down their throat?
Exactly. The last thought in the Savage thing, 350 stations talking to hundreds of thousands of people. Some of them most likely will end up on juries in future lawsuits that are coming down the pike. And he's trying to plant the argument against them winning some compensation.
Oh, snap.
They're just faking it. They're just faking it, okay? Just same thing. The corporate lawyers do this stuff all the time. Anyway, before I let you go, Have you heard of the Fighting Bob Fest?
No.
It's a fantastic gathering. That's been going on for about 5 years or so. The first year they had 1,200 people. A couple years later they had 4,000 people. Last year it was 8,000 people to hear speakers.
Oh, yeah. This is, okay. In northern Wisconsin, in celebration of the life of Bob La Follette.
Exactly.
Okay, it took me a minute, but I read about that the other day, and I was thinking, God, I'd love to be there.
Oh, that would be, talk about a networking opportunity, and fun politics.
Oh.
Sure. Andy Goodman speaks there, Cindy Sheehan, Granny D, Jim Hightower, politicians like Conyers, Tammy Baldwin's going to be there, Phil Donahue's going to be there this year. Good music, good beer, I'm sure, and who knows, somebody in your audience might be near Wisconsin or know people in Wisconsin, so check out fightingbobfest.org.
That sounds like somewhere our buddy Albert needs to go.
A buddy of mine actually might take his video camera up there.
But that would just be a blast. Well, Preston, we've got to run on. Like I said, I'm sorry I pulled up short with you, but what a night this has been. It's all sort of run together in a blur for me.
Is Peter live tonight?
No, he's not. He got stuck in the innards of a computer at the place that actually is his day job.
Okay.
And so he's not. We're going to rerun last night because last night's interview with Reverend Bob Galloway from Metropolitan Community Church in there in Knoxville was so doggone important.